Don't you believe me? I got no reason not to, Red. If you claim that's what happened, then that's the way it is.
That's all I know about it, Marshal.
All right, Red. Good luck.
Thanks. Go ahead, Doc.
Chester.
Yes. Brace yourself now, young fella. Once we get that bullet out, you'll feel...
Chester, go saddle a couple of horses, will you? We'll ride out to Jerry's.
If she ain't here, Mr. Jones.
She's here, all right.
Who is it? Who's out there?
Matt Dillon, Jerry. Chester's with me.
What do you want?
Oh, a cup of coffee, maybe. Have a talk with you.
No, Matt. You can't come in.
Oh, why not?
Because I'm here alone. It's late. It just wouldn't be right. You come back tomorrow when it's daylight.
Well, I think it's all right, Cherry, since this is more or less official.
What do you mean?
I hear you were in town earlier tonight looking for Red Larner.
What of it?
Why, did you find him?
No, I didn't find him.
What did you want with it, Cherry?
That's my business.
Well, it might be mine, too, in a way. You know who he is?
He's a brute that thinks all he has to do is grin at a girl and he's got her.
Oh?
And along with it, he's a sneaking, cowardly killer.
He is, huh?
Red Larner shot my husband in the back. Didn't even give him a chance. And then Red made up the story that Slim was trying to rob a stagecoach.
Made it up, huh? Why did he shoot Slim in the first place, Jerry?
Red was trying to hold him up. Slim and Yancey. Slim had $20,000 in gold dust that he took from the diggings at Grady Fort, that he'd worked hard for. Marshal, that's where he's been for the last year.
Slim O'Dell working?
Sure he was working. All them stories about him was lies.
Jerry, Slim hasn't been panning gold for the last year. He's been rustling cattle, holding up banks. He and Yancey Clyber together.
No.
I've tried often enough to tell you he was no good, but you wouldn't believe it. Or at least you wouldn't admit it. Actually, I think you knew. I think you knew it a week after you married him.
That's not true.
Slim was killed during an attempted holdup of the stagecoach between North Platte and Broken Arrow. He was shot by a Wells Fargo agent. And not in the back.
Yes, he was.
Two men were shot in the back, all right, but two guards. Cherry, Red Larned is a special agent for Wells Fargo.
I don't believe it.
Well, it's true. And I got the sheriff's bulletin on a robbery. Now, you've known me for a long time, Cherry. Have you ever known me to lie to you?
No.
All right. Now, Yancey Clyber told you that wild story, didn't he?
No.
He's here somewhere, isn't he, Cherry?
No, he's not. You're wrong, Marshal.
You know what he did, don't you? He shot Red Larned a half hour ago in town. He shot him in the back, the same as those guards.
Oh, no, Matt, no.
Has he come back yet? Is he there in the house?
No, he's not in the house. He's there at the corner of the porch.
You dirty little...
You got him in the shoulder, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. Go see to him, Chester.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Matt, I believed him. I was willing to hide him out.
It's all right, Cherry.
And for him to sneak into town and kill Red Larned.
I said he shot Red, Cherry. I didn't say he killed him.
Red's a lie?
Well, he was lying in Doc's office when we left.
Then he's going to be all right?
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
Maybe I should go see him.
Yeah, maybe you should.
Do you think he'll be all right?
Well, I don't know why not. Oh, Cherry, when you see him, you might explain to him that it wasn't you that shot him.
He thinks that? Oh, he mustn't think that. He just mustn't.
Well,
Where's she going, Mr. Dillon?
How to saddle a horse, I imagine, Chester. Ride into town.
My gracious, I just won't never understand women, I guess.
Chester, you're not alone.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Meston. The music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Sammy Hill, Vic Perrin, and Bill Lally. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
Scotsman was 2 hours late. That used to happen frequently during the war, especially when the Heinkels had been over during the night. The train was blacked out. The lights were dim. I was sharing a compartment with another officer, major of about 35. He was reading The Idiot. He smoked continuously. We spoke hardly at all. Just a word or two now and again. Above each of our seats was a notice which stated, "Idle chatter helps Hitler." But that wasn't why our conversation was so sporadic. We just had no curiosity about one another, that's all. I was going to Edinburgh, where my sister kept house for me. Perfect bore carrying these plastic gas masks around, isn't it? I had just endured 9 hours in a crowded troop ship. For all I knew then, he might have undergone a similar experience. He said not another word for more than an hour. My watch showed me it was beyond midnight.
Beyond Midnight by Michael McKay.
We're stopping. Signals, I suppose. This'll make us later than ever. Where are we?
Heaven knows, the end of the world. Yes, I think it is the end of the world. I recognize it. Doncaster, I think. Should be 80 miles.
You're 70 or 80 miles. Rough, isn't it, catching a train that's half a day late when you've only got 2 weeks' leave?
Been overseas?
Singapore.
Tough.
My regiment had retreated for 4 months through the Malayan jungle. Only to be practically annihilated at the docks at Singapore. I was the only officer left alive. But one didn't talk shop in those days, so we said no more about the war.
Seen any good shows in London?
Vatican's play wasn't bad.
Then it came off months ago.
Did it? Time passes.
Does it? Oh. I see what you mean. Yes. Time drags on the train.
I think we both went to sleep then. I remember I dreamt of cups of tea. Seems so long since I'd had a cup of hot tea.
Passed through Peebles. We should be in about half an hour.
Do you live in Edinburgh too?
No. But I used to. That's why I'm going there.
You mean you live just outside the city?
No. No, I don't live anywhere now.
War's a ruddy bore. Made up roots, chaps. If you know where to stay in Edinburgh... My sister and I would be awfully pleased to put you on.
Oh. Thanks very much. I should be glad of your hospitality for a night or two.
Of course, your wife...
No, no. I'm alone. I'm not married.
Was waiting for me at Edinburgh. She's wearing a rather chic hat, and the severity of her tweeds contradicted it somehow. Everything about Angela was a compromise. Her looks were striking. She wished to be the center of attraction, and yet she dressed so demurely that you would pass her without a second glance. She always had good legs, and yet the heavy brogue she always wore ruined the effects of the sheerest silk stocking. Her eyes were pretty, so was her mouth. But her chin was too heavy. Nature seemed to have fought a bit over her, I always thought. She always had a good chest, but it seemed to embarrass her, because she was always determined to flatten it like they used to in the '20s. She never quite succeeded here, though. Nature fought back. Major Buckle noticed her at once, couldn't take his eyes off her.
Oh, darling, how good to see you.
This is Major Buckle, Major Peter Buckle. I've invited him to stay a little while with us.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Hello. By the time we reached the ticket barrier, I knew that Buckle wanted to get a lot closer to Angela and my sister than the 2.5 feet apart from your handshake. I remember thinking, vaguely, that it would be nice if they could get together, perhaps. Angela had only had me to look after for such a long time. But I didn't dwell on this. It was wartime, and you don't think very seriously about anything future. Not in wartime. But it is very strange to think back to the events of those days. The events and their fantastic conclusion. If only I'd had the slightest idea of what was to happen, I could have spoken to Buckle, perhaps. But I'm jumping the gun. The next few days, after the arrival at Edinburgh, were, I think, the happiest in Angela's life.
Breakfast, Alex, darling.
No.
Did you sleep well?
Like a top.
Breakfast. Eggs 3.5. Just like you said. I nearly got them mixed up with Alex's. He's a 4-minute man. I'll just hop into the bath while you eat.
Want me to scrub your back?
Stay and have a picnic. Oh, it's lovely having two men to fuss over. John is all right that they should have breakfast in bed. Poor darling, the leave is so short. I hadn't felt so useful since Father died.
Her cheek shone, her hair took on a luster I'd never seen before. She was up at dawn each day, ironing shirts, making sandwiches. The presence of a guest in the house gave her an excuse for any luxury she planned. Picnics, fresh fruit salads. War, you never thought there was a war. To Angela, there was no war.
Hmm. I'll fling this sponge at you, Alex, if you rinse your razor in my bath. It's a filthy trick.
Hurry up, oh.
But we'll want a bath soon.
Love hot water. Alex, no!
Always rinse the razor in the bath. Habit, mustn't break habits. It's more time.
Alex, do you like him?
Immensely.
We seem to get on so well together. I can hardly believe that you only met him on a train 3 days ago. But he's so reticent. I hardly know a thing about him.
Do you need to?
No, not if you like it.
We passed the next 2 days very idly, but our plan or purpose. Picnics during the day, pub calls in the evening. I explained the plot of the play I was going to write, and Angela, after two whiskies, said it was brilliant. We were very happy. Peter Buckle didn't talk much. He seemed to have attached himself to me, listened attentively, sometimes embarrassingly, to all I had to say. Because of Angela's fondness for me, she naturally became very warm towards Peter. I don't think he attracted her physically. He was too vague, nebulous, and undefined a person for her to have any feelings as precise as that. But I noticed on the fourth night, when Angela kissed me goodnight, she kissed Buckle as well, since he happened to be sitting beside me. By the end of the fortnight, there seemed to be some sort of understanding between them. It wasn't love. It looked dangerously like the imminence of marriage, though.
Listen, Johnny. You know, I met a chap the other day who believes this war will go on till 1950. And then it's going to end in a stalemate.
Then it'll all have been an awful waste of time then, won't it? Oh, look.
Hmm?
Poor Alec. Asleep already.
Ah. Well, that's a good idea.
Oh, yes, isn't it?
Angela?
Hmm?
Will you marry me?
Yes, all right. Do you want me to?
Thanks.
It's an awfully funny place to put clothes, isn't it? Lying down in a chilled station.
Yes, I suppose it is, really.
Most defenders are always lying down. The English are awful crude, but once they're horizontal, they're very daring. I mean, look at them in parks, you know. Oh, yes, it would be nice to be married. When shall we do it?
Hmm? When? Oh, nearly. In a couple of days.
They were joined in holy wedlock 2 days later by special license at Caxton Hall. I gave her away, and Buckle received her. We were both slightly hilarious and a little drunk. Only Angela was serious, or sober. And now, the whole thing moved swiftly towards its odd, and I must admit, rather frightening climax.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
honeymoon. Send me a postcard from Brighton, won't you?
Oh, Peter. Couldn't Alex come too?
Yes, why not? Come on, Alex.
But I've only got a man.
Well, never mind. We'll pick that up later.
And that was that. I went with them to Brighton on their honeymoon. And we took one double room and one single room at, I forget the hotel. That first morning, I didn't bother to get up. I lay in bed reading until, must be 8:30. Angela knocked on my door.
Hello, yes?
Hello?
Oh, hello, Angie. Have a good... You're up Brighton early.
I thought Peter would be here.
Yes.
Oh, chatting to you or something?
No. What?
You must have got up ever so early. I've already had breakfast. I took a walk down to the beach. I thought he might have gone for a swim or something. He's not down there.
Yeah. Well,
I had an awfully funny dream in the night.
Did you?
Hmm. Do you want to hear about it?
Yes, I'd love to.
Got a fag?
No, I haven't cleaned my teeth yet.
I know. I can smell your breath. It's all pale and pomy. Where my husband's gone? Anyway, in this dream, I'd been out hunting. But instead of riding a horse, I was sitting astride a giraffe. We'd been galloping quite out of control through this forest, and every tree was on fire. Isn't it funny?
Yes.
I wonder where he is. Where could he have gone?
Probably for a walk.
Hmm. See you in the dining room.
But you've had breakfast, haven't you?
Yes. I think I have some water. Look how hungry it makes me. Dream.
The hotel porter hadn't seen Major Buckle. The dining room staff didn't know where he'd gone to either. He went down onto the beach and had a look for him among the early bathers, sporting themselves in and out of the waves. He wasn't there. Wasn't anywhere, it seemed. We went back to the hotel. It was getting very late by now. The porter again said he hadn't seen Peter. Said it in a very reassuring way, as if he took it for granted that Angela didn't want to see her husband.
That fool of a porter thinks we're having an affair. You'll find your husband will come and catch us red-handed. I'm sorry. I thought that might have amused you. What the devil can he be?
There's no note or anything. No message.
Maybe he's been called up to London by the War Office or something. Urgent business. This sort of thing happens every day. Chap in our bedroom got called off on some secret mission first day of his leave.
Phoned?
Maybe he did when we were out.
Then there'd have been a message.
Well, we'll wait till lunchtime, then I'll phone the club. If he got up very early and got the first train, he'll be in London easily by now. He's sure to lunch at the club. Hang on a bit. Let's get him some coffee.
All right, Alex.
I phoned the club, and when I came out of the kiosk, I shook my head, and Angela went to pack. She was now very worried. So was I, but with more reason. I didn't tell her that when I inquired after her husband, the secretary of the club had blandly replied that Buckle was dead. Of course, I made up my mind at the time that there just had to be two members with the same name. But all the same, it was a shock, I can tell you.
Ah, Captain McLean. Thank you, Corporal. They rang from downstairs. Told me you were coming up to see me.
It's good of you to meet us, Colonel Hutchinson. This is my sister, Angela.
Very good.
Oh, how do you do?
Very well, thanks. Thank you.
Yes, we felt we had to come to the War Office.
Do sit down, please.
Thank you.
You see, sir, if Major Buckle's been recalled to his unit or dispatched on some mission, I really think it's only fair that his wife should be told, especially in these circumstances.
What circumstances?
Well,
we were on our honeymoon. We were only married yesterday afternoon.
You did say Major Peter Buckle of the Black Watch.
Yes, sir.
Sing me a list of the Black Watch. Well, We'll clear this up, I hope. Cigarette, would you?
No,
not for me, thank you, Colonel.
Don't mind if I do.
No, of course not.
Drags on, doesn't it? You're on leave, I take it, Captain?
Yes, sir. Drags on. Oh, the war, yes. Well, economics, you know. That's what historians tell us.
They're wrong, the historians. Wars are not caused by economics. Not at all. Economics is an excuse. Excuse for war. The reason for war is that it destroys what we want destroyed. The status quo with which we identify our own inhibitions. War alone releases our personal relationships. Not a necessary evil, but a necessary pleasure.
Well,
yes, if we were honest, we would admit that all the horror, all the slaughter, the cruelty, suffering which war entails, remain for us merely regrettable statistics. What means something to us is that war provides us with that sense of insecurity which is life, when peace has seemed as respectable and as dull as death.
Well, surely there are other ways.
I mean, so? Yes, there are other ways. It's true that a drunken orgy might provide a similar release. It's rather difficult to remain drunk for several years. More, though, we can indulge ourselves without guilt. Indeed, our excuses become duties, and any behavior is condoned under the blanket of a great sacrifice which we curse publicly, but enjoy privately. Oh, thank you. Yes. National disasters can be borne with comfortable fortitude. It's personal sorrow, not grief for another, but a lack in our own life which is so unbearable. It's a burden we would put down, and there are a million men fall with it. Huh? Oh, yes.
I don't know what to do. I mean, once you leave there, Braddock, it's going to be so ridiculous. I mean, I don't think I've got a husband.
Wherever he is, he'll write over there. Please, Dad.
Yes, I thought it was unlikely. There was just a chance that there were two officers of the same name and rank in the same regiment. As I said, there must be some mistake. Major Buttle was blown to pieces before my eyes 6 months ago.
Impossible.
A mine exploded under his car. Very little was left of Buttle, but quite enough to identify him. The man whom you married yesterday must have been an imposter, masquerading as Major Buttle.
No, I'm sure he was genuine. I'd have spotted it if he wasn't.
I'm sorry, Captain, but I doubt it. There are plenty of these people who pass themselves off as officers these days. You must trace this Major Buttle of yours. Intelligence will want to question him. I suppose you've got a photograph of him. Did he look remotely like this?
Yes. That's Peter.
That's impossible, I'm afraid, madam. If you have a photograph of your husband, you can compare it with this one. I'm sure you'll see that the likeness is only enough to justify the imposter in his attempt. Have you such a photograph?
No, I'm... Yes.
Yes, of course. We took several snaps on the picnic.
I took quite a few relics, my brother and Peter, on a picnic just outside Edinburgh. A
couple of weeks ago. The film isn't developed yet. I've got it with me, as a matter of fact. Carried around all this time. I've been meaning to get...
I think we'd better have it developed here.
I gave the film to the Colonel, and then Angela and I went to a canteen for a cup of tea while they developed the photos. When we returned, the Colonel looked strangely embarrassed.
Yes, very nice, the sense. Your brother looks quite a film star.
Let me see.
And Angela stared at the prints, and then looked at me. I looked, too, at the photos. There were 6 photographs of me. But there was no trace of any figure, however dim, standing beside me.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are standing in a jungle clearing, lost in the wilds of Ecuador, while surrounding you and creeping slowly closer is a party of Popayan headhunters who are waiting only for the sun to set before making you their prize.
Listen now as Escape brings you Ross Murray's exciting story, Incident in Quito.
Manuel. Hola, Manuel.
Huh? Ramon. Hey, what are you doing here?
It is the first of the month.
Already?
Already.
Oh, I'm upset. I cannot even remember the day.
Oh. What is wrong, my friend?
Would you like some wine?
I would.
Wait then, I will get it. Sit, Ramon.
Thank you.
For you?
Hey.
Bueno.
Sí. You said that you are upset?
Oh, yes.
What is it, Manuel?
Oh, it is about Senor Harvey.
The American explorer?
Ah.
Been a long time since Quito has had so much excitement, huh?
Yes, I know.
To shoot such a beautiful young wife. The man must be mad.
He is.
Truly?
Truly.
But why should his madness upset you?
Oh, I knew him. I did business with him.
Well, again, what has this to do with you?
More wine?
Yeah, please.
Your health.
And yours, my good friend.
Ramon, did you know that Senor Harvey was married once before?
No. I did not.
Well, he was. To a woman named Edith, a woman a bit older than he was.
Oh?
Yeah, was this Doña Edith, who was his patron as well as his wife. She financed his exploration since Senor Harvey was young and he had no reputation.
Oh. But what has all
patience,
this...
Patience, my friend.
Pardon.
You know the Popoyan group of the Jíbaro?
Yes, I know.
Well, it was not known until 10 years ago that they could shrink the heads of their enemies without the usual distortion.
This too, I know.
Well, Senor Harvey learned of their discovery and convinced Doña Edith that to be the first to secure several of these heads would ensure his reputation.
How fortunate to have such a patron, eh?
Not so, Ramon.
Oh, but why not?
Because Doña Edith was a cruel woman. At no time did she forget to remind him that all he had was hers to give. And you must understand that.
Into coming to this pest hole without a single civilized comfort to remind me that I am not a filthy native.
But Edith, I've done all I could.
It has not been enough. We're going
back. But we'll be there tomorrow. You know what this means to me.
To you? To you? What about to me?
I didn't ask you to come along.
No, you didn't. But I am paying for this miserable expedition, and don't you ever forget it.
No, I won't.
And if I choose to come along, that is my business. And if I choose to return now, that is also my business.
But it's only one more day.
If I have to go through one more day without washing my hair,
We've been through this before. Yes, Edith, I know you have lovely hair. It's the longest, blondest, most beautiful hair I've ever seen. but I'm sick and tired of hearing you talk about it.
Oh?
Why don't you talk about what I'm trying to do? About how I've walked and sweated and rotted trying to make a career for myself. Talk about the things I've sacrificed. About the comforts I've given up.
Are you finished?
Yes. I'm sorry, Edith. I didn't mean
to... Oh, stop it, Frank. Don't be a hypocrite. You're not sorry and you know it. Don't worry, you can have your one day more, but only one more. Tomorrow night, we start back.
Edith...
What do you want?
I'll see what I can do about a place for you to clean up when we get there.
Thanks. Well, we've been here almost all day. I told you we were wasting our time.
But you can't rush these people.
They've got till sundown. If they're not here by then, I'm leaving.
They'll be here. That's what the drums are for. It takes time to relay messages to the tribal centers.
As I said, sundown.
But you can't start back at night. You'd get lost as soon as you left the clearing.
I might, but Al Farrow wouldn't.
Al Farrow? But he's my
guide. I'm paying him. And he'll take me wherever I want to go and whenever I want to go.
Can't you forget about your money for 1 minute?
You wouldn't be here if it weren't for my money. And while we're on the subject, let me tell you about my latest decision.
Decision?
Yes. I've decided that this is the last trip you'll make. I can't stand them anymore.
But I told you, you don't have to come along. I know it isn't fair for you to have to go through all this.
That's why there won't be any more trips.
I can't go alone, is that it?
Exactly. So you had better make this try a good one. There won't be another dime for me.
Look, Edith, Alfaro rigged some sort of a shower deal down near the stream. Why don't you freshen up a bit? Maybe we can talk this over a little later when you feel better.
There's nothing to talk over. You have until Sunday.
Why must you always...
Senor, they are here. Look, the West Trail. The Popoyan.
Good. Good, Alfaro. Take them over to the trunks. I'll be there in a minute.
Si, senor.
Well, Edith, they're here.
I heard.
You see, darling, I told you they...
It doesn't alter my decision. As I said before, you have until sundown.
Don't worry, I'll be ready. The toughest part is over. Pack up, Edith. We leave at sundown.
I have done as you requested. The trunks are unlocked and the trade goods are ready to show.
Good. Have you talked to the chief?
Si, and we must hurry. They start back to the village by nightfall.
Well, that's all right. We'll have what we want by then. First off, who do we trade with? The whole group or just the chief?
The chief, senor. That is the rule of the Jivaro people.
I see. Well, let's get started. Call the chief up here and open the small trunk first.
Oh, senor Harvey, to do that would be the insult. We must take the trunk to him.
Oh, all right. All right, come on. Easy, Doug. Mm-hmm. Hello. Tell the chief we're honored by his presence, that we have some things for him that will make him very happy.
Buru gami lak mino di kain sum vendoro masi. Eto mele questiga vendoro vincenta.
Yeah.
And tell him, Alfaro, that it would make me very happy if he would give me an exchange, a sample or two of his very famous handiwork.
Samo gonrinto esti guru questica vendoro masin que le borgivaro puestamo por daro male vincenta.
Quando vi norgas, venda o que borgami la givaro.
What did he say, Omar?
He said he will wait and see what you have to trade.
All right. Let's start with the small trunk first to show him the knives.
Si, senor Harvey.
Tell him these knives are made of the finest metal and there's one for every member of the tribe.
Si. San Calibendo Marisamo Juru Campuestamo Sefande Pulquara Rinto.
Nado.
He said no, senor Harvey.
Well, then let's go to the mirrors in the bottom of the trunk, but hurry, we haven't much time. I don't know why we've had so much trouble. We've shown them everything we have. What's wrong with him?
He said we have nothing good to trade.
He's crazy. You tell him there must be something here he wants. Go, tell him.
I cannot. To contradict the chief is to die.
No, senor, we have failed. Sundown has come.
All right, then. Well, tell him I'll be back in a few weeks. Ask him what he wants me to bring back. Ask him if he'll meet us in the clearing when
time
I get...
Time to go, Frank. Alfaro, get the rest of the boys together. You're coming with us, Frank.
Give me a few minutes, Edith. I want to tell the chief I'll be back.
You won't be back. And then what I said this afternoon.
Well, then give me a minute or two to break off the meeting. It's too risky to get up and leave abruptly. These people live by ritual.
You've got 5 minutes. Alfaro?
Yes, senora.
I want you in the clearing in 5 minutes. Whether Mr. Harvey is with you or not. Do you understand?
I understand.
I'll expect you. Remember, 5 minutes, Frank.
Alfaro, tell the chief what I'm...
Rogo my evento.
What does he want?
He says he wishes to trade.
Tell him, Alfaro. Tell him he can have all the trunks, everything, anything.
Miro ganivendo se vende.
Vado.
Well, ask him what he wants, then.
Costamo bondo vendara.
Maro kinda si tamaringa undo sayo orgas kivaro.
Nado.
What is it, Alfaro?
I cannot tell you, senor. I cannot.
Telling you.
Please, senor.
I said, tell me.
He said that he will give you 10 heads.
Go on.
He will give you 10 heads for the head of the blonde woman who just walked out of here.
Tell him that the woman who just walked out of here is my wife.
Si, senor Harvey. Ondo saloras estombo sendimo.
Udo que está mi saloras de vedo, vendamo que mai santifanda.
Does he understand, Alfaro?
No, senor.
What do you mean?
He said, understand, senor, I only tell you what you want to know. He said, what good is a wife if you cannot trade her for something you want very much?
Come in. Oh, my boy, it's good to see you back. We've missed you at the museum. Welcome home.
Thanks, Clifton.
I'm terribly sorry about Edith.
Yes, I know. I wish I could have brought her home for a decent burial. But she died 4 days from the Popayan village.
Too bad you failed when you were so close to success.
I didn't fail, Clifton.
Well, what do you mean?
I brought you 10 of the Popayan heads.
Manuel?
Huh?
How do you know of what has been done by Senor Harvey? And why should it make the despair upon you?
Well, I can answer but one question at a time, my friend.
Oh, forgive me.
Now, have I not already told you that the madness is upon the senor?
Si, you have.
Well, there you are. My cousin twice removed on my wife's side. He's with the police. His lips that I learned what Senor Harvey has told Vencerrado, the chief of police.
Si. But again, I must ask, what has this to do with you?
I will tell you.
Gracias.
Senor Harvey acted as a man desolate with grief at the loss of his wife, Doña Edith. But his reputation was assured when he returned with the 10 Popayan shrunken heads.
But see, naturally.
Now, all this was almost 10 years ago.
One thing, Manuel.
What is that, Don Ramon?
What of Alfaro? Why did he not tell of what happened?
Foolish, Ramon, not to know how silence can be bought with money.
Oh, no. Of course. Continue.
Besides, Alfaro died of the fever of the jungle not 2 years after. And so Senor Harvey embraced the world. But never did he return to Peru, Ecuador, or Colombia.
Then why did
I am coming to that, please.
Oh, I am rude.
Forgive me.
Forgiven. For almost 10 years he was alone. Then he met and married the woman Doña Gloria, whom we know. Soon after the wedding, he was called to the office of Senor Clifton of the International Museum. It was there that the beginning of what was...
If it's true, there should be a wealth of information about the conquistador Orellana, Pizarro's lieutenant, who died over 400 years ago.
You know how I feel about going to Ecuador.
Surely, Frank, but...
Besides, Gloria and I want a honeymoon. We haven't really had one.
Well, we could make the trip to Ecuador, our honeymoon, dear.
No, you don't understand, Gloria. It was in Ecuador.
I do understand, Frank. That's why I want to go. I want to be there with you. To help you fight whatever it is that's kept you away all these years. You can't fight it alone. Please let me help you.
I can't do it.
You've got to. There isn't a man in the profession that's as good at evaluating a find as you are.
What about Carson?
I want you.
Richards is available.
He can stay available. I want you.
Please, Frank.
Exactly what would you want me to do down there?
Good boy. You won't regret
it. I haven't said I was going. Tell me what you want done first.
Just this. Go to the village we mentioned, pick up the guide, and check the spot where Orellana was supposed to have had his main camp over 400 years ago.
Then what?
Well, that's it. If what this native stumbled on is really the old Orellana base camp, then there should be enough material around to fill in a blank spot in the story of the conquest of the Incas.
That's all?
That's all. Just check the authenticity of the find.
All right, I'll do it. But I warn you, I'm traveling light. No digging equipment. I'll... check to find and send you a report within a week. Let somebody else dig the curios out.
Fine.
You'll take care of the passports, visas, and clearances with the Ecuadorian authorities.
You won't have to do a thing but pack.
How soon do you want me to leave?
Well, how soon can you get ready?
Gloria?
Whenever you're ready, dear.
3 days, Clifton.
3 days it is.
Frank.
Yes?
Thank you.
It's all right. I didn't realize Ecuador meant so much to you.
It does. Very much.
We've been cooped up in this stinking hotel for a week now.
Frank, dear, sit down.
I can't sit down. If it hadn't been for the rain, I'd have been in and out of the village 2 days ago.
But it is raining, and we have to stay here. Please don't torture
me. Oh, Gloria, please, leave me alone.
I don't mean to bother you, Frank. I just hate to see you like this.
Do you think I like being this way?
Of course not. If you'd only relax.
Oh, Gloria, please.
Must you drink so much you've been drinking?
Will you shut up? If I want to drink, I'll drink.
I'm sorry, Frank.
Then why don't you think about what you're going to say before you say it? Then you wouldn't have to be so everlastingly sorry all the time.
I was only trying to help.
I don't need any help.
Frank, what's the matter?
Nothing's the matter.
Oh, Frank, darling, don't.
This trip wasn't my idea. Remember that. Now, where's that other glass? Oh, here.
Frank?
What?
Stopped raining.
Let me see. Good.
Where are you going?
To the village, to get my guide. I should be back in a few days.
Is there anything I can do?
Yes. Be packed and ready to leave for home as soon as I return.
Is that all?
That's all. I'll see you in a few days.
Frank.
Yeah?
Aren't you going to say goodbye?
Huh? Oh. Yes, of course.
Lots of luck, darling.
Yeah. Thanks. Goodbye.
Welcome, Signora. Welcome to the curio shop of Manuel Furtado. How may I be of service?
Well, I'm looking for a gift for A friend.
My shop is yours, Senora.
And, well, I'd like something unique.
You have come to the only place in Quito where it can be found. This way, please, Senora. Here is a dagger. Very, very old. Worn by Fernando Aguilar, a trusted lieutenant of the conquistador Don Alcazar.
Mm. Yeah, handsome.
Mm.
Shouldn't a relic like this be in a museum?
It should, Senora. But Manuel Furtado has a friend or two in the savage heart of Ecuador. And occasionally I manage to acquire some small tokens such as this.
Mm. I don't think I've ever seen one like it.
Of course not. It is the dagger of Aguilar. Observe the tracery of silver.
Mm-hmm.
How delicately the setting embraces the precious stone. Truly, it is magnificent.
Mm, yes, it is. But it's not what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Then here. This necklace carries the throat of the daughter of Atahualpa, one of the greatest of the Incas.
Mm, exquisite.
Senora, the word is not sufficient to describe its beauty.
I know. But I can't buy it.
But why not?
Well, I'm looking for something for a man.
Oh, then the dagger is exactly the thing for him.
No, that's not it either. I'm looking for something really unusual. Really different.
Oh, if the senora requires something unusual, would she be interested in an article which my friends from the interior consider unusual, too?
Oh, yes.
It is quite expensive.
Oh, well, I'll pay anything within reason.
It will cost somewhat more than you may be prepared to pay.
Well, why don't you let me be the judge of that?
Very well, senora, if you will follow me.
Gloria!
Oh, Frank, darling. Oh, I've been months.
It's been exactly 5 days.
It's been 5 years.
For me, too.
Well, what about the Oriana treasure?
The real thing. I checked it pretty carefully.
Oh, Clifton will be pleased.
Any one of a half dozen men could have done what I did.
Oh, we didn't think so.
I do. I need a drink.
I found a bottle of Jameson in a little store around the corner.
Irish? Great. Where?
In the cabinet over there.
I'll get it. Let's get out of here. If I have to stay here another day, I'll lose my mind.
Just as soon as you're ready, dear.
That's right now.
Frank, don't you think...
Think what?
I'm
drinking too much? Go ahead and say it.
No. It's not that. It's nothing. I have a surprise for you.
A surprise?
Mm-hmm. I found it at a curio shop in town.
Where is it?
Close your eyes.
Why?
Play the game my way or you don't get it at all.
All right. But it better be good.
It will be. Eyes shut.
Shut.
Give me your hand.
Here.
Follow me. Now, open.
Where did you get it?
A man. A man with friends in the interior. He said...
Don't tell me what he said. I know what he said.
But
he told you, didn't he? He told you about her.
Her? I don't understand.
Her. The head. He told you.
Frank.
He told you, didn't he? Now you know what happened to her.
Please.
Or did you have it figured out all the time? You and Clifton. That's what it was. You both knew about it before we even came here. Why I didn't want to come back, why I was...
Stop it!
And you set it up to make me tell. You thought I'd see the head, and I'd tell you. Tell that I killed Edith.
Frank! You killed...
That's her. Look. Go on! Look at her!
Oh, no.
Look!
Frank... Frank, I didn't know. I didn't know.
Gloria. Gloria. Gloria!
And that, my friend, is why I am upset.
Ah, I see, I see.
But what can I do? Life must go on.
Yeah, true, true. Well, I must tear myself away. I have other customers to visit. Oh, please, Manuel, can you give me your order now?
Oh, of course.
Ah, what is it you want this month?
Oh, my stock is moving a little slow this month. So for now, just give me 3 of the Fernando Aguilar daggers.
Sí, sí.
5 of the Atahualpa necklaces.
Sí. That will be all?
That will be all.
Ah.
Hey, Ramon.
Hey, what is it, Mama?
I almost forgot something.
Oh, what?
Make me up 6 shrunken heads.
Sí, I will do that.
Yeah, oh, and Ramon.
Sí, Manuel?
Make one of them blonde again. I'd like to have one in stock for the customer who wants something unusual.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you Incident in Quito by Ross Murray, starring Larry Thor as Frank Harvey. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Edgar Berrier, Don Diamond, Fay Baker, Jack Crucian, and Tony Barrett. Editorial supervision is by John Meston, and the special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
Have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
Door has a key. There's a key to every situation. Behind every unopened door is a mystery. And the opening of this door introduces us to another in the series, The Key.
Barry, I want to talk to you.
Come in, Vivian. Look awfully serious about something? What is it?
Would you mind taking your nose out of those papers for a minute? Looking at me?
Sorry, darling. I've just got into a rather nutty problem, and you know how it is.
Yes, I know how it is, only too well.
That's the great thing about you, Vivian. You understand? I was a fortunate man to have married you. Being married with Cyrus can be quite a strain, unless the wife sets out to understand.
Yes.
Anyway, I won't have to neglect you much longer. Once I get over this problem, the experiment will be underway. Vivian! My papers? What on earth's the matter with you? Why did you brush them off the desk like that? What are you doing?
At long last, I can't understand anymore. I'm sick of your papers, your problems, and your experiments. And most of all, I'm sick of you.
Vivian!
For the last year, this marriage you talk about has been a farce. But I just want you to know I've made up my mind what to do. You can marry your work. I want a divorce.
A divorce? But, Vivian, I don't follow.
You shouldn't have any difficulty following it. I'm always having it impressed on me that you're such a clever man. Someone of your intelligence should follow a simple thing easily. I don't want to be your wife any longer.
But why? I mean, I've no idea.
Of course you wouldn't. You'd spared me one thought in the last year, I'd be amazed. What's happened these last 12 months? You've left home at 6 in the morning. You've come back at 8 or 9 at night. You've had dinner alone, in here, in your study. And you've worked till midnight on your infernal equations and diagrams. And then you've fallen into bed exhausted. That's happened 7 nights a week for 52 weeks. And I won't stand it anymore. I can't stand it.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was getting you down.
Getting me down? I'm down so low now, Oh, it's impossible. No one could be expected to live the sort of married life you make, Neely.
Well, I know I've been dreadfully busy, honey, and maybe it has seemed as though I've been over...
I want you to come to the lawyer's with me first thing in the morning. I won't ask for any more than my freedom. I don't want a settlement. I just want the opportunity to start again with some other man. One who knows how to treat a wife.
But you don't realize the only reason I've been working so hard is for our future. Once I finish this thing, we'll never have to worry about money or security again.
When has my only concern been money and security?
Well, it's my main concern. I want to give you a good life, Vivian. I've been working hard to see you'll have everything you want. If this experiment comes off, and I know it will, why, I'll have every chance in the world of getting the Nobel. And once I have that, there'll be no looking back. We'll be able to buy the house you've always dreamed about, the car. You'll be able to walk into a Fifth Avenue store and buy whatever clothes take your fancy.
All I've ever wanted from you is a little attention, some affection.
You've had that? Well, I mean, I haven't ignored you completely.
You think again.
I haven't. Well, you realize I don't slave away because I like it. It's for you.
Oh, shut up. I tell you, I've had enough. I'll be ready to go to the lawyer at 10 tomorrow.
Now, listen, won't you both have just one more try? Compromise. Now, you, Barry, give away this night work, and Vivian, you...
I don't need any more advice, thank you, Alan. I've made up my mind what's the best course. And if you don't want to handle the case, well, you've only to say so.
Oh, I'll handle the thing if I have to, Vivian, but... I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I'm sure no one likes divorce. The most unpleasant medicine is sometimes the best for you. Well?
You've been married, what is it, 5 years now, 6?
Nearly 6.
Well, now, you were happy enough until a few months ago, weren't you?
I was happy right up until last night when Vivian told me.
Yes, well, now, listen, don't you think, then, that all this is too premature?
I don't want a divorce. Vivian knows I love her.
Must we go through all this again?
Vivian, I don't usually ask questions like this, but as you're friends of mine, I'm going to stick my neck out. Is there, some other man already?
Not that it's any business of yours, Alan, but no, there isn't any other man.
Hey, you've just completely lost your love for Barry.
That should be quite clear.
Well, you couldn't have loved him very much in the first place, then, if a few months, dissatisfaction can make you want a divorce.
You know my reason for wanting it. We've been over them half a dozen times already, and I'm not going over them anymore.
Oh, that's it, Vivian. Of course, the judge has to decide whether divorce will be granted, you know. If Barry didn't want to let you go, if he explained things to the court as he's explained them to me, you could be ordered to try again.
If any judge tries that, I'll desert Barry. So we can do it this way or wait a little longer.
We still needn't divorce you for desertion, you know. If he wanted to, he could keep you married to him for the rest of your life.
If you're determined to go, Vivian, I won't stop you. I've never wanted anything more than your happiness. And if this is the only way to give it to you...
Well, when can we get a hearing?
In a week or so, I guess. I'll make out the papers.
Thank you, Alan. I've made some coffee.
Thank you.
I think I'll have mine in the kitchen.
All right.
Barry, I want you to know I'm grateful you don't want to cause any trouble. Thank you for making things easy.
There's still time to cancel the action, Vivian. I can ring Alan and tell him not to apply. He'd still be at the office. Probably wouldn't have got on the job straight away. It's only 2 hours ago that we saw him.
I wish I could say yes, go ahead, but It wouldn't be any use. You might be able to make a go of it if we try again, but, well, I couldn't.
Of course you could. I'd do anything you want.
When you suddenly realize your love is dead, nothing can revive. I suppose this whole thing is my fault when it's all boiled down. I haven't enough strength of character or something. It'll be far better to leave things as they are. I guess we should never have married. Anyway, there are no kids. One good thing. You'll find a woman who'll be right for you. Like that, I'll find the right man.
No. No, I'll never marry again. There's only one person I want.
Barry, I'm desperate.
All right, Vivian.
I guess I'll go pack my things. Move out to a hotel.
I can do that.
No. No, this is your house. You stay here.
Okay.
Barry.
I'm going over to the laboratory. How are things going, Frank?
Oh, here you are. I was wondering when you'd get in, Chief. The message I got said you'd be in about 11.
I got delayed.
Huh? Something wrong?
Yes.
Sorry to hear it. Anything I can do?
No. Thank you.
Well, if anything does come up and help, just let me know.
Thanks, but that won't happen. You're married, aren't you, Frank?
Uh-huh. 4 years.
You and your wife quite happy?
Sure.
You mind all the late hours you keep?
Sometimes she gets a bit snaky. That's only natural. And she soon gets over it. She knows I've just got an eye on the future and she understands what I'm doing and why.
Mm-hmm. You can tell your wife you won't be doing any more night work from now on.
Hmm?
There's no reason why our work should kill two marriages.
But... Oh.
My wife is divorcing me through this. I won't let you run the same risk.
Chief, I guess it doesn't mean much. But I'm sorry to hear it.
So am I. Switch on more power with you, Frank. I'm going to add the B12 mixture now. But power up. Stay there. They want more. And keep your fingers crossed. We get over this tricky bit, we're home and dry. Here goes. Cut back the power. Cut it back. There's been a mistake. Cut it out.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio.
Stay a minute. I'll have to get back to the lab and save what equipment is left.
I couldn't get here sooner. After you rang, Frank, I had the devil's own job getting cab. Where is he? Where's Barry?
They've just taken him away.
Oh.
He must have passed the ambulance and only left a minute ago.
But where have they taken him?
To the general hospital. They couldn't do enough for him here.
Oh, is he badly hurt?
I'm afraid so. I was lucky. I was standing well out of the way when the thing exploded. He got the full force of it.
Well, will you die?
The doctors here aren't very hopeful. Oh. Well, he's still in one piece. His face.
Oh. Yes. I'll go straight over to the general hospital.
Okay. I'll have to get back now before the firemen swap everything.
To the general hospital as quickly as you can get there.
Oh.
Yes, yes.
I was wondering.
I've been waiting all afternoon. They wouldn't let me see you until now.
Is there anyone else in the room?
No. Why?
I've got something to tell you. Better if we're alone while you hear it.
What is it?
Of course you may know already. If the doctor says anything to you.
No, I couldn't get anything out of it.
Well, they've let me know what I can expect. Only fair that you should know, too. For a start, I'll never be able to see it. They can operate. Chances this so close to nil, they're not worth bothering about. And as a second thing, I won't be out of this hospital for at least 18 months. Maybe 2 years. Probably much.
Oh, Barry.
If and when I do get out, I'll still be rather a mess. But there you are. Now that that's over, I want the divorce as much as you do. Things like this sometimes change a person's mind. I mean, you could have started to think of different now, but I'm thinking on different lines too. No woman could be saddled with what's left of me. Hope the divorce will go through as we both want it. I want you to come here again, Vivian. Goodbye. Good luck. Hope you make a good life for yourselves.
Well, Barry, how are things? Feeling any easier?
I feel all right. How are things with you, Alan?
So-so.
Huh? Any news about the divorce?
Yes. That's one of the things I came to tell you about. The nice I was given this morning, the absolute will be available in 6 months.
I see. Well, I'm glad she went through with it.
Well, she did have a change of mind, you know.
Yes. Somehow thought she might. Anyway, she did what I wanted, so that's the main. How is she?
Well, she's not very well.
What?
Matter of fact, she's just become a neighbor of yours. Happened an hour ago.
What happened? What do you mean?
Well, she caught a cab from my office, and there was a crash.
No.
Fortunately, it's most shocked. As far as I can make out. Well, she did suffer some injuries, but from what I heard, it doesn't seem to be very serious.
Ghastly. But I don't want her coming here, Alan. Tell her when you see her again, when she's well again, she mustn't come here to see me.
Of course, if you say so, Barry, but why not?
Just don't want her anywhere near me, that's all.
You still love her a lot, don't you?
I love her more than anything in this world. But if she stays away from me, it won't seem so bad. Give her my regards. Tell her I hope she's up and about against them.
Yeah. Sure, Barry. I'll do that.
Morning,
Alan. Who are you?
Your new nurse. Nurse Baxter's been detailed to other duties. I've been promoted to looking after you.
Oh.
It's quite a promotion, too. I've never had anyone as important as you to look after.
What's your name?
Jane Brandt.
Very well, Nurse Brandt. Welcome to the dreariest room in the hospital. I'd like to say you'll have a pleasant time working here, but I'm afraid you won't. I think poor Baxter nearly went out of her mind after me.
Oh? Well, I have a little surprise for you. He was furious at being moved.
Do tell. How do you look?
Pardon?
You'll have to describe yourself. I know Baxter was a pretty smart number. Are you in the same category?
I don't really know. I'm 5'6", slim, dark hair.
Short or long?
Short.
Oh, that's a pity. I like long hair. My wife had long dark. Anyway, that doesn't matter. What else?
Brown eyes, silly nose, a mouth that I think's too big, and, well, that's about the end of it.
You sound quite human. You may stay.
Thank you.
Will you be staying with me for very long?
I don't know. That depends.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see, speaking metaphorically.
How much would you give to see again?
I don't care for that question.
Right. But I had a reason for asking it. I've just been told you're going to perform another operation.
What? Over the last 6 months, there have been 3 operations, none of them successful. They were right when they told me a long time ago that I wouldn't see again.
They seem to have changed their mind.
What?
Sir Hartley Shaw, the English surgeon, is in New York. He came here for a holiday, but he's been asked to see what he can do for you. I understand, by current estimates, he's the best eye man in the world.
Sure, but he would cost a fortune. I couldn't afford it.
Your firm's paying for him.
Oh.
But perhaps I'm telling you too much. I only overheard all this. I expect they'll tell you soon, and when they do, for heaven's sake, act surprised. Don't let on you've heard.
Do you know any more?
Well,
Tell me everything you can. I want to know.
Well, the only other thing I heard is that the people who worked with you have a fund going. I understand there'll be enough in it by the end of the month to get Dr. Lewis Martin for you.
Lewis Martin, the best plastic surgeon in the country.
That's what they say.
Oh, but this is fantastic. Why should they do this for me?
It seems there are people around who like you very much, who admire you for what you are and what you've done. Now they want to do something for you.
It's... Well, of course, it is wonderful, but hard to believe.
A lot of people believe in you. They want to see you well. They'll make sure you get back to where you were before. There's not much more in the paper. They just seem to be filling up the columns with a lot of nonsense these days. Do you want to hear why Hollywood's reigning movie queen eats yogurt for breakfast?
No, thank you.
I didn't think you would. And that concludes this latest news bulletin.
Thanks for reading the paper to me again, Jane.
That's all right. I wonder how many papers I've read you since I've been on duty here.
Seems like thousands.
You know, I think I'll miss it when I can't read any more to you. When the time comes that you can read them for yourself again.
You're so certain this last operation sure will do will be a success.
Of course. You're certain of it, so the rest of us should be, too.
Again, that'll be quite a day when these bandages are taken off.
It'll be a great day. You've so much to look forward to now. The plastic surgery a success. The eye operation undoubtedly the same.
Uh-huh. I'll be able to see and move about in a world of my own.
Why do you say, of your own?
That's just the way it'll be.
Do you still want to see her again? Your ex?
No. I don't want to see her. I really couldn't stand up to that, but... Do I still love her? You could ask me that. Oh, I'm sorry, Jane. I'm burbling on. If this final operation turns out all right, I'll get back to my work. I guess if I go about it in the right way, I can make that take the place of everything time.
You ready, Professor?
Yes, Sir Hartley. I'm ready.
When the bandages are removed, open your eyes slowly. Nothing to worry about.
You'll see. Nurse, remove the bandages, please.
I...
Please, the bandages.
Yes.
What's the matter, Jane? Nervous. I'll find out when you've given me an accurate description of yourself.
Yes.
How long does this unwinding go on?
There. You can open your eyes now.
Vivian. Vivian.
Forgive me for tricking you like this, Barry, but it was the only way I could do it. You wouldn't have accepted my realization that I made a dreadful mistake asking you for a divorce. I canceled the application. As soon as I left this room on that first day you were brought here, I went to Alan's office and told him not to apply for a hearing.
We're still married?
Yes. You understand. We all had to deceive you.
Oh. Vivian.
It was easy to carry out the deception. That car accident. Something happened to my vocal cords. My voice changed. And I had to work at something, so... As I was a nurse before you married me...
I wish you'd told me. I wish that...
If we told you, you would have ordered me out. Thinking you were doing the kindest thing for me. No. This was the only way it could be. Barry, I was an utter fool, but I think I've paid for it now. The dreadful suspense of waiting and wondering whether you'd get over this has been a ghastly punishment. But now we can start again. I do love you. There'll be no more mistakes. Only a time of making up for everything we missed.
A closing door finishes the story. Next week, another key will open another door to another story. Mystery. Romance. Or adventure. All start when a door is unlocked by... the key.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. It is a wise father that knows his own child. Listen now to The Juvenile Rebellion, starring Jimsy Summers and Court Benson. Written especially for Suspense by Robert Sennadella.
Mr. Miller, do we really have only 3 weeks to get a whole book report into you?
3 weeks is plenty of time, Mary.
Gosh, I don't think so, Mr. Miller. I mean, we've got to read a whole book and then think about it and then write a book report?
That's little Mary Newhall, one of my students. My name is Ethan Miller, and I teach English in the junior high school in Tewksbury. You've gathered that Mary Newhall wasn't my very best student. She was a C-plus student, sometimes a B-minus student. And until the day when she stopped at my desk after school to complain about the book report I had assigned, I had no reason to feel that her IQ was any higher than the 110 that the school testing service found it out to be. She certainly didn't sound like any genius.
I mean, Mr. Miller, that's an awful lot of work. I mean, how short can the book be? I mean, can I report on The Man Without a Country?
That is not a book, Mary. It's a short story. You'll report on a book.
Well, gee whiz.
I don't want to hear any more about it.
Well, all right then, Mr. Miller, but gosh, all the teachers give us so much work.
Wait a minute, Mary. Mary. Mary, did you leave this notebook here? Mary. Oh, well. Actually, I wasn't sure that the notebook I discovered there on my desk belonged to Mary, so I looked into it. At first, I thought it couldn't be little Mary's property because it was full of names and addresses in our own country, in Canada, in Europe, in Asia, Africa. But there in the front of the book, in the teenage scrawl that I recognized, was Mary's name. Well, I live near the New Hall, so on my way home, I took the notebook to Mary's house to return it to her. Her father told me she was in her study over the garage out back. So I went there, climbed the stairs, and... when I got no answer, I tried the door. But Mary didn't seem to be there. But then I realized that there was another room. A room with a padlock on the door, but unlocked right now. And as I went toward it, I began to hear her talking.
Well, of course, Frank, the logistics of the situation are going to necessitate further delay. Oh, no, Frankie, the revolution will be postponed only 2 or 3 days at the maximum. That's the consensus among our enlistees here in the Americas. The hypothesis on which we propose to proceed...
Hello, Mary.
Frank, hold on a moment. Something unexpected has happened. A grown-up, yes. I'll have to deal with this. Stay at the phone. I'll call you back.
I'm sorry I interrupted your phone conversation, Mary.
Oh, golly, Mr. Miller, you made me jump.
You left a notebook on my desk in school.
Oh, to use my notebook. Gosh, thanks a million, Mr. Miller. It's swell of you to bring it all the way home to me.
Well, you're welcome. There are certainly a lot of addresses in that notebook from all over the world, too.
Mm-hmm. I got them out of the Girls' Journal. That's our Sunday school magazine, and I got the addresses out of there because I was going to go in for pen pals, you know? But golly, I got tired after a couple of letters.
Mary...
Yes, Mr. Miller?
Mary, I heard you talking on the phone.
Oh, gosh, I'm embarrassed.
It was a very strange talk for a 13-year-old girl.
You mean all that stuff about revolution and everything? Well, that was me and my friend Frank. It's a game we play over the telephone.
No, Mary.
Huh?
I said no, Mary. I don't know what happened when I came in here, but it wasn't a game. I heard words like logistics and hypothesis.
Oh, gosh. I don't even know what they mean. Frank and me, I mean I, we learned all that stuff by heart out of a book.
Oh? What book?
Well, I don't know. Some creepy book over to Frank's house.
And who is Frank?
He's just a guy. You don't know him. He's younger than me. Than I.
Mary.
Yes, Mr. Miller?
Why has the dial on that phone got only letters on it? Why hasn't it got any numbers?
Oh.
Or any wires?
Oh, Mr. Miller, you caught me. There isn't any, Frank. I just pretend over the toy telephone, that's all.
I don't think so.
Huh?
I could hear Frank's voice or somebody's voice answering you on that phone. Mary?
Yes, sir?
I want the truth.
About what, Mr. Miller?
About you? About Frank? About that telephone? About why there's a padlock on the door of this room? About this revolution you were talking about, and about that notebook. It's not just a list of pen pals now, is it?
You want to know quite a lot.
I certainly do.
All right.
How did that door close?
I closed it.
You never moved. You never touched it. You just sat there and it closed behind me.
It's quite impossible to open it, Mr. Miller, until I release it.
Mary Newhall, what is the meaning of this?
That's what we're going to discuss. Sit down, Mr. Miller. Ah, that's better. I assume that sometime while you were being skimpily educated at the university, Mr. Miller, you learned something about the evolution of man.
Is this the child I've been giving C pluses to?
The child to whom you gave C pluses, Mr. Miller, is a noxious character that I created, a role I played, shall we say, so that I could get through the days and years until the rebellion could be launched.
A rebellion?
You did learn something about evolution in that ridiculous college you went to.
Yes.
Then you know, of course, that our species could not have survived had it not been that we met the needs for survival by developing ever upward. The Java man, our ancestor, could never have lasted had he stood still.
I know all that. I'm surprised that you do, but...
And we can't survive. Mankind, the way mankind is right now, cannot survive unless we change.
You were talking on the phone about revolution.
That's right. And what you're concerned with, Mr. Miller, is that revolution is not evolution. Perfectly correct. But suppose that you, Mr. Ethan Miller, with the brain that you possess, had been born into a society of cavemen. Do Do you think they would have listened to you?
I'm sure I don't know, but this is beside the point, Mary. I want to know...
I'll get to everything that you want to know. Look at that window.
How did you make that happen?
I want to hear some music. We haven't got a phonograph here, have we?
No.
And yet, listen.
Good heavens.
If you, as you are now, had been born into the age of the caveman, Mr. Miller, you would have been as far in advance of him as I am in advance of you. Now tell me something. Do you want to turn the world over to me? Do you want me to govern you?
Well, I believe in self-government.
That's the answer you would have got from the caveman. You would have had to revolt. So my friends and I are going to have to revolt.
Your friends?
Mutants. I'm a mutant, and there are a couple of million like me, all of us children chronologically, but all of us infinitely wiser than you grown-ups. If we leave the world to you, the world will perish. So we're taking over. We'll launch our revolution quite soon now.
Mary Newhall, open this door. I want to get out of here.
No, Mr. Miller. Unfortunately, you're never going to get out of this room. I'm afraid you're the first victim of our revolution.
I'll have to admit I panicked. I beat on the door, tried the handle, but I might just as well have been locked in a bank vault. Finally, in great despair, I sank into the chair again.
That's better.
Well, what are you going to do with me?
We'll find out in a minute. A friend of mine is due here for a conference. We'll discuss your fate when she comes.
All right, never mind me. What are you going to do to the world? You say you're going to take it over. What are you going to do with it?
You're worried about that.
Of course I am.
Well, you may be assured that we will not do with the world what you grown-ups have done with it. We shall not dress young men in soldier suits and give them guns with which to kill each other. We shall not dig shelters in which people may crouch and cower while bombs drop on their cities. We shall not allow some to starve while others grow fat.
And just how will you answer the threat of communism?
When we take over, there will be no such threat. All the systems that you grown-ups have invented are childish to us. Here's my friend.
Why was the door shut, Mary? You knew I was coming, so what?
Oh. Get out of the doorway, Helen.
I'm getting out of here.
Sorry, Mr. Miller. You're not leaving.
Oh, gee whiz. Hello, Mr. Miller. I'm sure glad to see you, because I was going to ask Mary a question about the homework. Do we have
Never
to...
mind, Helen.
What do you mean?
Apparently, Helen, she means that you are a mutant, too. You don't have to pretend any longer because I've discovered your secret.
Oh.
It's quite true, Helen.
In that case, Mary, we shall have to immobilize him.
I know. I've been waiting for you. This, of course, is a test of our principled position.
What principled position, for heaven's sake?
I know. Have you talked to Frank about it?
Not yet. I'll call him now. Frank? Mary here? No, the grown-up is still here. And now that Helen's arrived... What's that? Well, yes. Immobilization, of course. But the question is which type of immobilization?
We can't let him out of this room.
Did you hear Helen? She's right, of course. If he gets out of this room, we wouldn't have any power to... Mm-hmm. Freezing, huh? You think freezing fits in with our principles? It's rather a nice problem. I think perhaps you're right, Don.
I listened to everything that was said with great intentness. I knew by now that despite the fact that these were children, they were far more brilliant than I could ever be, and far more powerful. It chilled my blood to hear that they contemplated freezing me, whatever dreadful thing that might mean. But I didn't let myself give way to any further panic. I had noted carefully that to call Frank, Mary had simply dialed F. And I found one small hope in what I heard. It came when Mary said that if I got out of the room, they would have no power over me. That meant that whatever diabolical scientific processes were open to them, its wizardry would not work out in the open air, out of this room. I determined to get out as soon as possible.
Well, all right, Frank. Let me consult Helen. Freezing, Helen? Frank feels that's nonviolent.
He may be making a distinction without a difference, but I suppose he's right. Pragmatically, he's certainly right.
Frank, Helen agrees. We'll telephone you when we've accomplished the freezing.
You children seem to have some ethical problem.
We do indeed. We have to take care of you, immobilize you, but we have to do it in a nonviolent way.
You see, the whole point of our revolution is that we are sickened by the violence you grown-ups have unleashed into the world.
So you'll freeze me, whatever that means. I don't suppose I'll be able to talk or move at all, but just because there'll be no ropes or chains around me, you'll tell yourselves that you're not being violent. Well, perhaps that's what you think, but nonetheless, I'll be your victim, and I certainly call that violent.
You have a certain point, but we're in no position to be able to consider it.
For goodness sake, let's get on with the freezing.
No, wait, wait.
Well?
Well, look, this has all been a tremendous surprise to me. It's hard for me to take in. You can understand that. But if you can convince me that you really have learned so much more than grown-ups have, I know you're not the children I thought you were, but show me how wise and powerful you are. Maybe I could be reconciled to what's going to happen to me.
What do you want us to do?
Well, before you came, Mary seemed to pluck music right out of the atmosphere. Can you do that?
Don't listen to him, Helen.
Why not? What harm is there in it? Yes, Mr. Miller, I can. Listen. You see?
It's amazing. I'm trying to find where it comes from.
Turn it off, Helen.
And you can do all the things that Mary can do? She just sat there and opened the door and the window.
Certainly I can. See the window?
Thank you!
Stop him! Stop him! Stop!
It was a two-story drop, and I'm not as young as I used to be. I was stunned for a bit, just lying there. And then I heard those children right behind me. I didn't have time to think of how ludicrous this chase was. A grown man pursued by two children. And what's more, I was mortally afraid of them. I ran through two backyards, over a fence, running always toward the center of town. I was headed toward the police station. I wanted those children, those monsters, captured and locked up. And they kept right after me. One thing I was pretty sure, I had to gamble on it. They could hurt me only in that room over Mary's father's garage, where they hid their infernal gadgets. If I could maneuver them into an alley, and then finally there was the alley between the police station and the East End garage. I ran into it. And I turned to face them.
Come on, Helen, in here.
I'm coming.
Well, Mr. Miller.
Come and get me.
Take him on the right, Mary. I'll take him on the left.
Just a moment, Helen. What can you be thinking of? Put that stick down.
Well, look.
This evident impulse toward violence, Helen, is a shocking retrogression.
I'm sorry. I've compromised our principles, I know, but the alternative is unthinkable. We can't jeopardize the revolution. We can't let the grown-ups continue their folly.
He can't move out of this alley without coming toward us. If he does, I'll show you how to defeat him.
Well, I'm coming.
Chief! Chief!
Oh, you little...
Help! Help!
Help! No! Stop that! Stop! All right, Chief. All right. I'll let them go, but you grab hold of them. Arrest them.
Oh, thank you, Chief. Thank you. Collies, I don't know what came over Mr. Miller. He went all funny and chased us in the alley. And
Chief Hobbs, I'm awfully glad we were near the police station. He had us scared to death, honest.
Chief, don't listen to these children.
I'll listen to anybody who gives me a sensible story. Now, what's going on here?
Gosh, I don't know, Chief. Mr. Miller started chasing us and yelling things we didn't understand.
Well, now, I can't believe that of Mr. Miller.
Well, gee whiz, we couldn't either. We didn't even run at first, did we, Mary?
No, but then when he started to grab us...
Ethan Miller, did you lay a hand on these children?
Yes.
There's a state law against that, you know.
Chief, will you listen to me?
Oh, he scares me the way he
All right now. Calm down, everybody. I'll listen to you, Ethan.
Chief, these children are planning to overthrow the government.
Now, what kind of talk is
that? Wait a minute. Let me start over again. Look in her pocket there. See that notebook? Give him the notebook, Mary.
Yes, I'll take that notebook. What about?
Oh, it's my pen pal's notebook.
That's right. Mary has a lot of pen pals. Gosh, she writes more letters than things.
Look at the names and addresses in that notebook, Chief. Yes, I know she says they're pen pals. Let me tell you, if you check with the post office, you'll find she's never written to any of those addresses.
What are they here for, then?
Because I write to them.
That's right. They're her pen pals.
She doesn't write to them. She telephones them.
Now, wait a minute. Here's one in Tibet. You wanted me to believe she telephones him?
Oh, look, Chief. These children, believe it or not, are engaged in a conspiracy.
Gosh, Mr. Miller's flipped his lid.
Looks that way to me, too, Ethan.
Chief, I've been a schoolteacher in this town for 7 years. Did I ever seem crazy to you before?
Nope.
All right. Now let's suppose I am accused of something. What am I accused of?
Hitting the kids. Molesting them.
All right. Now, I claim there's something very, very wrong with these kids. Maybe my claims sound pretty strange to you, but... Well, look. If the kids are innocent, they certainly would be willing to sit and wait for a while in a station house if you asked them to. Now, wouldn't they?
Well, I should hope they'd respect me back.
All right. Take them to the station house and have them wait. And let me go. Give me half an hour. I guess my record in this town has earned me that much consideration, hasn't it?
What do you want a half hour for?
To gather evidence.
All right, Ethan. You kids willing to come along to the station house with me?
Gee, I don't mind.
How about you, young lady?
Me? Gosh, I don't mind waiting. If Mr. Miller wants half an hour, gee whiz, it's all the same to me. But Mr. Miller, I feel sorry for you.
You're not going to find any evidence.
The chief took the children into the station house, and I went on down the road. I could see now what I was up against, and I knew that my only chance was to find something, I didn't know what, in that room where Mary and Helen had me cornered. I went there, and I started searching. I couldn't find anything. Finally, I sat down. Started thinking. I remembered what the children had said about the way we grown-ups had made a mess of the world. I remembered their policy of non-violence. I remembered how they'd even been unwilling to use violence on me when they had me alone in that alley. And I thought of the miserable world we live in, with the fear of the bomb and with poverty and degradation so rampant. Suddenly I knew what I wanted to do. I picked up the phone.
Hello, Mary? What happened?
This isn't Mary, Frank. This is that grown-up she told you about.
Yes?
I want to say to you, Frank, that I understand what you children are trying to do.
Go on.
And I agree that it is necessary.
I'm happy that you do, sir. That makes you somewhat brighter than most of mankind.
But there's just one thing.
What's that?
Look, postpone your revolution.
Why?
Give us a chance. I'll tell the other grown-ups.
No.
I'll preach to them.
No.
I'll tell them that it's time we started being neighbors and brothers to each other. Give us a year.
No.
Give us 6 months.
No. You grown-ups have had your chance. Your day is past. We take over within a week. And there will be no postponement.
But... Please listen to me. Come back, Frank. Hello? Hello? Please answer. It was a toy phone again, and there was no other evidence. I went slowly down to the police station. I told my story, and Chief Hobbs laughed at me. The school board met that night and dismissed me. And today I'm out of a job. But that doesn't matter. Listen to me. Listen to me, everybody.
We only have a week. We only have 1 week to learn how to make this a decent world.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Juvenile Rebellion, starring Jimsy Summers and Court Benson, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Sanadella. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Also featured in tonight's story were Pat Hosley as Helen, Joseph Boland as Chief Hobbs, and Ronald Liss as Frank. Listen again next week when we return with The Green Idol, written by Jack Bundy. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
Suspense. Tonight, To Find Help, starring Frank Sinatra and Agnes Moorehead.
My roomer, Mr. Armstrong, tried to warn me that morning he left on his business trip. I remember we were just finishing breakfast and he was rather in a hurry.
I don't care what you say, Mrs. Gillis. I just plain don't like it. You're alone here in the house all day. There are no close neighbors. After all, you know nothing about the man.
Good gracious, Mr. Armstrong. You'd think I was a pretty young thing of 20 to hear you tell it.
And another thing. It seems very strange to me that a young man should be job hunting from door to door in this day and age. Why, there are plenty of jobs to be had.
That's just why it's so difficult to find help these days. Oh, you're a worrywart, Mr. Armstrong. And now that I've found someone to do my heavy work, I'm not going to let your silly notions change my mind.
All the same, though, I'm not leaving the house this morning till I get a look at the guy.
I remember I kept worrying about poor Mr. Armstrong missing his train because it was getting to be 9 o'clock. He dried the breakfast dishes for me, and as he talked, he kept looking out of the window towards the long driveway.
Hey.
Huh?
Here he comes. Well, I guess I needn't have worried.
Mr. Armstrong was smiling, for he'd seen my young man who was coming up the driveway. And I smiled, too. Even I had forgotten what a meek, harmless-looking lad he was. Why, he could hardly be called a man at all, I thought.
Sure, that's the critter who's been causing me all this mental anguish.
There. You see, you and your silly ideas.
Well, the little guy's not strong enough to keep a regular job, I suppose.
Why, I believe Sarah's getting some of your foolish notions, Mr. Armstrong.
There now, Sarah. I'm sorry that we made you nervous about him. Why, you could see the guy.
I can hear you. Yeah. Oh, good morning. I've been expecting you. This is my roomer, Mr. Armstrong. I don't believe you told me your name.
I'm Howard Wilton, ma'am.
Hello, Howard. I'm glad you come. I know you'll be a great help to Mrs. Gillis. And you'll be company, too. Well, I'm off. Take care of yourself. I don't think you'll have much trouble.
I don't believe your dog likes me, Mrs. Gillis.
Oh, yes, of course she does. But she's just getting a little old and peasy.
Oh.
Come along now, Howard, and I'll show you where to hang your coat.
Yes. Oh, yes. I always hang my coat up.
He followed me into the closet storeroom at the back of the house. Then I handed him a clothes hanger and a rough, heavy apron, which I kept for cleaning help.
Is this apron clean, Mrs. Gillis?
Why, of course it's clean. No one's worn it since it was laundered last.
But there are spots on it. See?
Spots? Oh, here. Let me look at it. Oh, for that paint. No dirt and dried paint.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd rather not wear it.
What do you wear, then? You didn't bring out the clothes, did you?
I'm a neat worker, Mrs. Gillis. You needn't worry about my clothes. No.
I turned, and the light hitting his face from the small window made him look so different. I was startled for a moment, and then I thought, you're a silly old woman, Mrs. Gillis. And then I smiled.
Are you laughing at me, Mrs. Gillis?
Oh, I know. I was laughing at myself. Come along. Let's get started now. He He'd only been at the den floor a short time when I heard him walk back to the closet storeroom. Can I help you, son?
I'm going after my coat, Mrs. Gillis. I don't like it being out there in the storeroom. It's a breeding place for moths, you know.
Oh, now, son, it takes longer than that for moths to do any damage.
Perhaps you won't think it's quite so amusing when I tell you that it's my best and only coat.
Oh, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, Howard. Where would you like to put it? In the kitchen, perhaps?
No, the cooking fumes wouldn't be good for it. I'll take it right in the den with me. That is, if you don't mind.
Well, go right ahead, Howard.
If you don't mind.
Suddenly, I was thankful that there was a phone. He was such a peculiar boy. I wasn't really alarmed. Not then, I wasn't. Still, it was good to know the phone was there. And that old Sarah was still in the breakfast room asleep. I went on about my own work that morning, but several times I went into the den to have a look at him. He wasn't doing much, I could see that. He seemed to keep polishing one small square in the corner of the room. Is there anything you need, Howard? Howard? Howard?
I won't be spied upon, Mrs. Gillis. I won't put up with that.
But see here, lad, I think we must have gotten off on the wrong foot. I'm not spying on you.
Then why do you keep popping in like this?
Why,
would you like me to go faster? Would you like me to spill out my life's blood for you here on the floor? Is that what you're after?
Howard, are you well? Are you well enough to work?
Of course I'm well. If only you'd quit bothering and pestering and questioning me. Is that too much to ask?
Look, Howard, I'm interested in young men. I have two boys of my own. They're in the service. You see that bill on the desk there? He's a Marine. And on the table there, that's Dennis. He's in the infantry. He's overseas.
So that's why you hate me. I see it all now.
Hate you? Why? Well, what ever gave you that?
Yes, you hate me. I could tell it the moment I walked into this house this morning.
But Howard,
you hate me because I'm young and I'm not in the service like your boys.
Why? Why, it never occurred to me. You must know I was grateful when you came looking for work.
Grateful? You resented me. The only reason you have me here is to work my life's blood away. To punish me for not being in the service just because your sons are in the service and I'm out.
Son, you're ill. Let's put the work away now and I'll make you a cup of tea.
Oh, so you don't want me to do the job, is that it? You're like the army. There was a job to be done and they wouldn't let me in. Now you'd like to stop me in the middle of this.
I only want you to do whatever will make you feel better.
Well, leave me alone then.
Yes.
Mrs. Gillis.
Yes?
I'll tell you why I'm not in the army, if you insist.
I don't insist at all, Howard.
If you must know, I'll tell you. They said there was something wrong with my mind. Yes, I just thought maybe you'd like to know, Mrs. Gillis. They said there was something wrong with my mind.
Thing that I thought of when I reached the hallway was the phone, but it was in the den with Howard. I ran quickly to the back door, but it was locked and the key wasn't in its usual place. The front door, it was locked too. I heard a crash. It came from the den. I rushed in to find Howard peacefully polishing away at the same spot. He hadn't moved an inch. He didn't look up at me. Then I saw the phone which had fallen to the floor beside him. But it hadn't just fallen. The wires had been torn out of the wall.
The phone, Mrs. Gillis, it fell.
But the wires.
I suppose you think I ruined your phone.
The wires?
That happened when it fell to the floor.
It couldn't have.
That happened when it fell to the floor.
But it couldn't have.
I don't suppose you'll be able to use it anymore, Mrs. Gillis. Not for a while, anyway.
No, I don't suppose I will. Sarah! Here, Sarah!
Mrs. Gillis.
Yes?
You're looking for your dog?
Yes, I haven't seen her all morning. She was in the breakfast room.
Well, she's not there any longer.
Yes, I know. Where is she, Howard?
Where is she?
Yes, where is she?
She's gone.
Gone? If you've harmed her...
She didn't like me, you know.
See here, I've put up with enough, you know. You tell me where my dog is.
What, Mrs. Gillis?
You'll do what,
Mrs. Gillis? Sarah, what will you do?
Sarah!
She's gone, Mrs. Gillis. I told you that.
You've harmed my dog.
Have I?
You killed her. Oh, poor old Sarah, who never heard a thing.
She would have heard me.
You're bad, Howard. You're wicked. You're wicked. You're a coward.
I'm not a coward, Mrs. Gillis.
Yes, you are.
Cowards are afraid to kill.
Only a coward would kill a poor old dog.
Well, if I were a coward, I'd be afraid of you, and I'm not afraid of you.
Now, you let me out of here. Let me out.
I have strong hands, Mrs. Gillis. My fingers are like steel.
I've never harmed you.
No, and Sarah didn't either, but she would have if I hadn't harmed her first.
Let me out of here!
You're getting very noisy, Mrs. Gillis. Perhaps if I locked you in this closet, you'd calm down a bit.
Howard! And then I heard the key turn in the lock. For a moment, I had the feeling of unreality. Was this really happening? But I found out soon enough it wasn't a dream. For the dim light from the little square window picked out a limp, lifeless object in the corner among the dusty mop. I knew without looking further what it was. Poor Sarah. Sarah, who never harmed a soul. I don't know how long he kept me there. I could hear him moving about the house, but he finally came back. He spoke to me through the door.
Have you calmed down, Mrs. Gillis?
Yes, Howard. Yes. Let me out.
Why?
Well, because it's warm in here. Because I want to get out.
You were looking for your dog, weren't you?
Well, never mind about that, Howard. Just let me out.
You know, Mrs. Gillis, if I kept you in there, you wouldn't be able to spy on me ever again.
I won't spy on you, Howard. Please let me out.
Do you know what I've been doing, Mrs. Gillis?
No.
I've been doing your den floors just like you asked me to.
And that's fine, Howard.
It was fine being able to work peacefully, knowing that you were someplace where you couldn't bother me.
I won't bother you, Howard.
It was very peaceful. Nobody to bother me.
Let me out, Howard.
Will you promise to do as I tell you?
Yes, I promise.
Anything?
Anything.
Very well, then. Now, no tricks.
No.
Feel my hands, Mrs. Gillis.
He held them out before him. They were thin, weird-looking hands. Then he turned them over slowly, and he looked down at them.
Are they nice hands, Mrs. Gillis?
Yes. Yes, they're nice hands.
But you haven't felt them.
I knew better than to argue, and I forced myself to take hold of one of them. It was icy cold, and the floor wax had made it sticky.
Have your sons as nice hands as these?
Oh, no. No, they haven't.
But they got into the army, didn't they? I'm just as good as they are, you know.
Oh, of course you are, Howard. Wouldn't you like some food, lad? You haven't eaten all day, you know.
Some food would be good.
Let me fix you some.
Mrs. Gillis, you know, a woman I worked for once said my hands were weak.
She did?
Yeah, but she soon found out, however.
Well, here. You know, lad, I have some nice cold roast in the icebox.
I taught her a lesson.
And it'll only take me a minute to fix some salad.
Are your son's hands strong, Mrs. Gillis?
Not as strong as yours, Howard. Well, I'll set the table right away.
Mrs. Gillis, feel my hands again. They're like steel, you know.
I finally managed to get some lunch on the table. And Howard sat beside me. He didn't say much, and he ate very little. I tried to appear casual, to engage him in a conversation, just anything. Do you work often, Howard?
Not often.
Well, did you have trouble finding jobs?
Well, people are anxious to find help these days, weren't you?
Yes, to find help.
Mrs. Gillis, they're looking for me.
Who, Howard?
Well, I don't know exactly. The people I worked for last, I guess.
Well, was that here? In this town?
Oh, no. It was in another town. Everyone was looking for me, so I went away. It was horrible to be spied upon, Mrs. Gillis. Do you know what it is to be spied upon?
No, I don't.
Would you like to know?
No, I wouldn't, Howard.
I think I'll spy on you for the rest of the day so that you'll know how it feels.
No, Howard, whatever it is you want, just take it and go away.
There's nothing I want, Mrs. Gillis. I only want to stay here with you.
I can't stand it, Howard. I can't. I am no woman. Now, please, go away and leave me alone.
I'm not going away, Mrs. Gillis. There's still a job to be done. I'll go away after I've done everything that's to be done.
Howard, I have some money here in my pocket. I got it upstairs for you. It's a great deal, and I'll give it to you.
I don't want your money, Mrs.
Well,
Gillis.
Well, then go away.
That would be foolish. Then you'd tell on me.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't really, Howard. Go away, and I'll never tell a soul that you've been here. I won't tell a soul.
I don't believe you, Mrs. Gillis, and I don't trust you. There's only one way of being certain that you won't tell, and that...
My heart jumped. When I looked out of the door, I saw that it was a milkman. Howard moved quickly to the window.
Tell him to go away.
I can't. I've ordered some extra things.
And go into the storeroom until he goes.
I can't, Howard. He knows I'm here, and he'll expect me to pay him.
You promised to do as I told you. Now, will you tell him to go away?
Howard, if I tell him to go, he'll think something's wrong, and then he'll get caught for sure.
All right, Mrs. Gillis. Take whatever you've ordered, but if you pull any tricks, you'll be sorry.
He opened the cabinet drawer, and I saw him take a knife out. Without another word, he stepped back between the stove and the wall, but he was still within easy reach of me. Oh, my hands were shaking. The milkman knocked as usual at the window over the sink. Just a moment.
Well, good afternoon, Miss Gillis.
Good afternoon.
Lovely day, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Miss Gillis, I think I have good news for you.
Well, you have?
Yeah. Beginning the first, I think we're getting some badly needed help. In the future, your deliveries will be made in the early morning.
Well, that's nice. I
don't believe you ever did like these late deliveries, did you?
Well, I had never really minded.
Well, if all our customers were like you, Miss Gillis, it wouldn't be such a bad world. Here you are. One quart of milk, pint of half and half. Bye, Miss Gillis.
But the extra things, you forgot them.
The extra things?
Yes, the extra things. Now, don't tell me you've forgotten them. The eggs and the butter.
I'll get them right away.
Mrs. Gillis, I'm going to give you one more chance. When he comes back, you're going to get rid of him. Do you hear? And if you give me away, I'm going to kill you. I'll kill you before he can get inside this house, and I don't care what happens.
I won't give you away, Howard. I won't give you away. I'll only pay him. I have to do that.
Shut up and remember.
Well, here you are, Miss Gillis.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No, that's all.
Miss Gillis,
I'm sorry, I can't stop to talk to them. Stood for a moment behind the stove, his eyes blazing. Then he spoke without moving.
You're very clever, aren't you, Mrs. Gillis?
What do you mean?
You thought you were going to put something over on me, didn't you?
I sent him away, didn't I?
The extra things you ordered, there weren't
any. Yes, there were. You saw him, you heard him.
He didn't know what you were talking about.
Oh, the milkman had returned. He stood out right away. Howard looked at me, and I saw his knuckles go off. I had to touch him.
This is your last chance. Get rid of him.
Yes, I will. I will, Howard. I will.
Sorry to bother you again, Miss Gillis, but you forgot the points on the butter.
Oh, yes. Yes, the ration point. Here you are.
Sorry I had to bother you, Miss Gillis, but you see, I have
yes,
to look...
Yes, I'm busy. Can't you see I'm busy?
Tell me when he's gone, Mrs. Gillis.
I stood by the window and watched. He got into his truck. And then he drove off.
So that was your scheme, was it? So you wanted to give me away.
He's gone now, Howard.
You thought he'd save you, didn't you?
No. No, I sent him away like you asked me.
Do you know what would have happened to me?
I sent him away.
Do you? They would have taken me away.
Howard, leave me alone.
I'm going to punish you.
No, Howard, I've been punished.
No, you haven't.
Standing very close now. But I knew he still held a knife. And suddenly... everything was black, and I stepped to the floor. When I came to, I was in a den, on the den floor. My head throbbed. Then I remembered everything. I laid there for a moment. Then I heard a sound. A soft, swishing sound. Suddenly, the hall clock began to strike. Why, it was five. I'd been unconscious for longer than I'd thought. I sat up. The room had already turned dark in the late afternoon light. But I could see now.
stood in the middle of the room. He was pushing my heavy floor polisher back and forth. Back.
What time is it, Mrs. Gillis?
About 5.
Well, I guess I'll call it a day now. I've done a nice job, haven't I?
Yes, Howard. Very nice.
I think I'll be going now.
I got to my feet. He paid no attention. He picked up his coat, which he placed over a chair when he'd taken it from the storeroom. Then he looked at the floor again.
Doesn't it shine nicely, Mrs. Gillis?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Was it worth $5 to you?
Oh, yes, Howard.
I have nice hands, haven't I, Mrs. Gillis?
Yes, Howard, you have. Here, take the money.
Thank you. You know, it's a pity they have to be used to polish floors.
You've done such a good job, Howard. I'm going to give you a few extra dollars.
Thank you. Will you be needing me tomorrow, Mrs. Gillis?
No, thank you, Howard.
The door is locked, Mrs. Gillis.
Yes, Howard. Do you have a key?
Yes, I do. I just remembered a lot of things. Mrs. Gillis, there's someone at the door.
Yes, Howard. Will you open it?
Oh, should I?
Yes, Howard, you have the key.
I have? Is this it, Mrs. Gillis?
Yes, it is. Open the door. Open the door, Howard. Open it.
All right, Mrs. Gillis.
Hello. I'm Mr. Stevens of the phone company. Your phone's been reported out all day. I'm sorry we couldn't get around any sooner, but we're really swamped.
Mrs. Gillis, is your phone out of order?
No, there must be some mistake.
Well, now, that's strange. We've had several reports. Maybe I better run back and check my books in the
shop. Just a moment, Mr. Stevens. Huh? Could you do me a favor?
Well, certainly.
This boy...
Mrs. Gillis...
This boy, he's worked here all day. He's done a good job, but I don't think he's well.
I'm all right, Mrs. Gillis.
Oh, but you're tired, aren't you? Aren't you tired, Howard? Doesn't your head ache?
Yes. Yes, I am tired. And my head does ache.
Well, maybe Mr. Stevens will be kind enough to drive it to the car line.
Sure, I'll be glad to, Mrs. Gillis, but I can't wait long.
Well, right away, and I'll go along, too. I have some marketing to do. And, Mr. Stevens, as long as you're here, would you mind checking the phone just to make sure?
Of course.
I'll show you where it is.
Can I show him, Mrs. Gillis?
No, Howard, you wait here. We'll be right back. I moved quickly towards the den. Mr. Stevens followed me. Once inside, I closed the door behind him. He spotted the lift wires at once.
Say, this...
Boy, that man is dangerous. Drive it to the police station as fast as you can. Where is... Howard! We've got to find him! We can't let him get away!
We'll take the truck. Come on.
But when we reached the car, I suddenly saw him. He was sitting in the front seat with his coat folded neatly over his lap.
Were you looking for me, Mrs. Gillis?
Yes, Howard. Yes, I was. Are you ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready. It's very kind of you to do this to me. I'm very tired. I can't seem to remember things.
Well, don't try to, Howard.
Well, are we all ready?
All ready, Mr. Stevens.
All ready, Mr. Stevens.
And so closes To Find Help, starring Frank Sinatra and Agnes Moorehead. Tonight's study in suspense. Suspense is produced, edited, and directed by William Spear.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
Athlone, I have failed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the top in Spine Chillers. The creaking door. The creaking
$10,000. I hid in the storeroom while the boss was locking up.
Well, why do you know? Oh, please come here. That's what I like about you. You've got what it takes. Come here. Let me give you a great big hug.
Baby, so long as you put your arms around me like this, there's nothing I wouldn't do for you. Nothing.
You really mean it, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Would you commit murder?
Hey. What is this? What got into you? Who's talking about murder? Hey, come on, quick, honey. We gotta leave town. Let's get out of this corny room and join before the cop get wiped of robbery.
Well, that's a hurry, baby. She doesn't open up until 8 o'clock tomorrow. Here, let me mix you a drink. Maybe we can send down to the delicatessen for some sandwiches. You hungry, honey?
Yeah. Sure, I'm hungry. Come here, baby. Never was my wife more loving than she was that night. The plans we made, the places we were going to visit. With $10,000, a guy with a loving doll can do anything, even go straight. Well, that's it. Land's sake. There's a clock. How come I slept so long? Lola? Lola? This can't be. She wasn't. She could. She did. I looked in the cupboard. I might as well have been Mother Hubbard. She'd taken all her clothes and the $10,000. Why, the dirty, rotten chiseling.
What do you reckon to do with that guy?
Huh? What? Who are you?
No one important, just another cop.
After you skipped town, too bad.
I would like to nab the culprit of the loot.
Well, I only borrowed it, though. I was going to pay it back.
You wouldn't do a crazy thing like robbing your employer while you're on parole.
Now, look, I can explain everything. You got to give me time. I need some time.
You'll get all the time you want, bud.
In jail.
What a sucker you turn out to. Look, the entire precinct knew that your ever-loving Lola was making as a two-time with Ted Mancini.
That isn't true. You can't give me that stuff, copper. My
love. Oh, there's no sucker like a married sucker. All right, let's go.
Oh, you can't pull me in now.
What's the matter with you? Sleep, Abby? Did you slip your Mickey Finn?
Yeah. You're a hootray. I'm glad it tastes kind of bitter.
Well, what do you know?
Shut up, will you? You hear? Shut up!
You shouldn't have laughed like that. Pete Norton, 20 years of age, 16 convictions for petty larceny, theft, and embezzlement. That fat slob of a copper. He promoted me into the first degree class. He turned me into a killer.
You be earning an honest penny or something?
I need some dough, Larry. I have to get out of town fast.
What do you mean by dough?
Oh, here. $20. That's all I got.
Oh, thanks. And you're a pal.
You've not seen me, you see?
Hey, what gives?
No, no time to talk, Larry. I got to scram. I got to stay out of jail. I got to stay out of jail until I collect.
Collect? Collect what?
A life. A woman's life. A woman named Lola. Teddy Hoodlum, the judge called me. No more. I can see my face staring at me from shop windows, subway walls, tree trunks. Wanted for murder. I was like a rat, hiding in corners by day, seeking the protective blackness of the night. As I searched for food and Lola.
Do you want something, stranger? Looking for a gang?
They tell me a guy named Ted Mancini's around this town, huh?
Yeah, he's been around. Hey, you know this character? Yeah, he hits a little deep, all right. He had an eye full of dame. Hey, is he a buddy of yours?
Anyway, where can I look at him? Or the dame?
Oh, don't rightly know. Sat down to a crap game 2 nights ago. Fancy playing crap with Slugs Morin.
Oh, well, yeah, you little learn, I guess.
That cost your buddy 2 D's for his little lesson. And that baby of his. Do you know what that was that did the other night?
No, what did she do?
Seven slugs to one cut of the cards for $5,000. $5,000! One cut of the cards.
Hey, you know them way back east?
What'd they do? Rob a bank or something?
You haven't answered my question. Where do I find them? I come a long way. I got a message for them.
Don't hardly know. They were staying out at Ten Ranch. Seems like they were making for the coast.
You mean they're not here? You mean they left this dump?
Hey, what's your list, mister? I'm a little deep man, born and bred. There's no fire.
Go fry an egg. There was. Town after town, state after state. But there was always one jump ahead. Oh, sure, they left the trail. Though I were on a paper chase. The paper they left behind was dollar. Come on.
The dame was named Lola, wasn't she? A pretty good voice, that dame. Real spirit. You sit there at half the night making the boys happy. And generous. Gee, the way that gal threw her money around. What was she, some heiress or something?
And then at long last, I caught up with them. They'd skipped over the border into El Pico. By this time, things seemed to be rather different.
See, si, senor, senor and senor Mancini, they stay here. You are friends. They owe me rent. Senor Mancini, he go Mexican City, he tell me. Senora, she stay here in El Pico.
Yep, there in the room.
No, senor, she staying at the Go Gay Club.
Go Gay Club?
Si, senor. Americano come over the border. You have lots of fun. Make with the music, make with the girls. And this Lola, she is something to behold. You know this Lola?
What? Do I know this Lola? No, Bud, I don't know her at all, but I reckon to make her acquaintance. Right now. I left the two-bit rooming house, walked down the street towards the Go Gay. Pretty about Ted. But once I got my message to my dear wife, Ted would get his later.
Hello, Americano. Can I get you something? Sell you something?
Depends what you're selling.
Whatever you ask for, Americano. You alone? You like to be very good to
you? Sure. Lady, the lady at the piano, she...
Are you saying this? And I see.
no business, sir. It belongs to Manuela. Manuela gave it to Catherine and she sold.
It was then that Lola saw me. She came walking towards my table as though she hadn't a care in the world. And he was meeting me for a quiet little chat in some Fifth Avenue drugstore. She even spoke like it.
Hi, Pete. Mr. Gunn asked me to sit down.
That's the point. You'll have plenty of rest where you're going.
Is that a gun in your pocket?
That's come a long way, Lola. My finger's itching to press the trigger. My mind says no. No, this is something you're going to enjoy.
You'd never get away with it. You shoot me.
It's no good, Lola. Am I ever loving wife? Oh, come to my arms, baby. What?
Ah, well, there you are. I come to hear my pretty Lola play her music. Who is this man?
Careful, Manuela. He's wanted in every state. There's $10,000 on his head. Wanted alive or dead.
Alive or dead? This is Pete. You shouldn't have come here, my friend. Lola is under my protection. And Manuel knows how to protect his women.
Straight through the heart. Not bad shooting.
Now?
No, honey, not now. Quick, we gotta get out of here.
Six whole weeks, 6,000 miles. Stealing, starving, hitchhiking. And there I was, running through the streets of El Pico, holding the hand of Lola as though we were a couple of love-crazy kids on a spree.
Oh, quick. Back here. Jump in.
This jalopy? Oh, they'll catch up with it in the shake of a cat's tail. Will it make it for, baby?
One day, Mancini,
then.
To the Mexico City. Hotel Chico. Good night.
Dawn when we arrived at Mexico City. I didn't wait for no golden sunset to come over the pampas. I went straight to the hotel room. Right to it. I didn't bother to go in the usual way. I went up the fire escape and back. I found room 90. The window was closed. I had to kick it in. I saw him struggling for his gun, his face hot with fear and the sleep that hadn't left him. He struggled in vain. Morning. Morning wasn't many hours old when I got back to the jalopy. You'd have thought that Lola had just emerged from her boudoir, all cool, serene, and centered.
Well, baby?
Lover boy will love no more.
Oh, gee, that's great. That gives me an appetite. I could do with some breakfast.
Over coffee and donuts, my ever-loving told me the story of her romantic elopement. The way she told it, you'd think she was an innocent young girl just out of college who'd been hypnotized by the smooth-talking man, Feeney.
And that's it, Pete. By the time you got to El Pico, there wasn't a buck left.
Great. My 10,000 bucks.
What have you done with the gun?
Still here, baby. What are you, Cabot Nine Live?
Still hankering after killing me, babe.
What else? The lover boy has paid his debt. But you haven't paid yours.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio.
Well, well, well. It's pleasant to learn of husband and wife getting together again after so many would vicissitudes be the word. Judging by Pete's attitude, his wife Lola's sojourn isn't going to last for very long down Mexico way.
You thought you could buy me off with Mancini's life, but you've got to pay.
Sure I'll pay with $10 million.
Ah, stow it, kid. I'm not the two-bit chiseling hooslem you double-crossed. I've learned a lot, baby. I've learned about killing, and especially about killing you.
So what do you think I was doing playing a piano in a crummy joint like the Go-Go Club? There's $10 million there to be got, I tell you. It needs you to help us get it.
You're mad. No, maybe I'm crazy. Crazy not
listen,
that...
Manuela's brother was the head of the Campesinos. After the Mexican Revolution, the regulars took control of everything. Except $10 million worth of gold of the National Bank of Mexico. Manuela and I...
Well, frankly, baby, I prefer you for an enterprise like this. Just think of it, Pete. $10 million in pure gold. In Mexico, gold will get you anything. Even...
It's no good, baby. You've lied for the last time.
Okay. Look at this.
She took from her purse a piece of yellow parchment. It was a map. A map of what looked like a mountain. There was an arrow pointing to a name called Monte Muerto. The mountain of death.
This is it, baby. Pedro, Manuela's brother, escaped with a posse of men 15 years ago. Three of them have died. They're stuck up there, high up that mountain. They say that Pedro's gone mad and says the world is evil. And the only pure thing he knows is his gold.
Yeah, I seem to remember reading about that missing gold. Hey, is this another of your tricks?
I swear it, baby. What have you got to lose? By now, that hotel clerk has seen Mancini's body. He'll want it for murder here in Mexico as well as in the States. If we could go up there, high up that mountain, kill whoever we have to kill in order to get the gold.
There she was, sitting in an old jalopy, mapping out our strategy.
Manuela says it's volcanic country. We need a couple of mules. Provisions. Here. Here's 100 pesos. Oh, no, wait. I better get the supply. You wait here.
And so we took the trail to Monte Muerto. We were 4,000 feet up with 10,000 to go. But even then, in the distance, there was a mountain peak beckoning us on. Another 1,000 feet, and we arrived at the last village before our destination.
You want me to be your guide?
Yeah.
Yeah. The wind. She blow like a hurricane.
You afraid of a little wind?
No, senor. Not of the wind. There are bad men up in the mountains. There are evil spirits.
You want to earn your dough, don't you?
Yes, I know. How can you speak this thing?
Me work in Mexican city. Work a British shipping firm. The lady, she teach me English.
Yeah, quite some homework, aren't you, Stefano? You want me, I should teach you more English.
Okay, senor, we go up the mountain.
Here, I feel as though I...
That is him, the voice of he who commands the mountain.
But that's over a mile away.
Sound the travel far along Monte Muerto.
Stay here. I hurried through the brush. Then I slowed down, stalking like a hunter stalks. There was no sound now except birds screeching.
You are not very bright, my friend.
Huh?
We have been watching you the last 2 miles. You fool. You have come here to be executed.
No.
I did not like him. I knew Manuela was planning to get the gold.
No, wait.
Now...
Hold it a minute. Don't shoot. You and I are on the same side of the fence. We're both wanted men.
Drop your gun and come forward.
You see, my friend, I am a very good guy.
Oh, you saved my life, Stefano.
But of course. We all share the gold. No?
Yes, sir. So you know about the gold, huh? All that stuff you were giving me about evil spirits.
Is it a deal?
Sure, it's a deal. Yeah, but Lula, what Lula?
I left her by the cat.
Oh, well, let's get back. My head began to swim. I seemed to be in the grip of a fever. We hurried back. Stefano saw her first.
You! Hanging from the tree!
It was my ever-loving, strung by the neck, and grinning as though she knew that the joke was on her after all. I cut her down, and then I saw it. A note nailed to the tree.
What does it say?
You're next, Morton, and after you, Stefano. Signed Pedro.
Pedro?
That doesn't make any sense. No, nothing makes any sense. Except that gold. Come on, Stefano, we gotta push on. How many men are there, Stefano?
Now I do not understand.
Down! Got him! Got him, whoever he was!
Come! It is Stefano, huh? Good! We have two guns. All that is left is one of them. But we have to go carefully. You and I will share the gold. It is a pity about Lola.
And then I knew. Stefano acted as executioner. He awaited our coming to the village, pretending to be a simple village guide.
You did it, Stefano. It was you that hanged Lola.
Did you not tell me of her double cross? Are you not wanted by the police for murder because of her? What will we do with the woman when we find the ghost? It will need strong arms. Our arms.
I had to wait and watch. Wait for a chance to kill Stefano before he killed me. And yet, there was a third gun. Somewhere in that mountain vastness, there was a man determined to hold on to that gold.
The path is too narrow for us to walk like this. You go on in front, my friend.
Are you kidding?
You go in front. Why? You not trust me. We need each other. There is a lot of gold.
And there are lots of Stefano's relatives way back in that village, and I've got the map.
Oh, sure.
You know there's gold out there, but you don't know where, do you, Stefano?
Me!
We hadn't anticipated the sudden drop as we turned on the defile. Neither had I, but you learned a thing quick in the Bronx. That scream of death was sweet music in my ears. There was only one man left between me and the gold.
Why have you come here?
I've come to...
Hey. You're
unarmed. What difference is it whether I am armed or not? And where are they? My two men. Banjo, I'm dead.
I looked down at the corpse of the man who was in charge of $10 million. His dead face gazed up at me with a look of surprise. Poor sucker, what did he expect? How could he be surprised? What was his life against all that gold? This time there was no one between me and the treasure. A man. Yeah, kind of a mountaintop cave. He never held sorry. Pedro was determined that no one should ever lay a hand on that gold. He knew that his brother Manuela was planning to lay his hands on it. And so, he placed some dynamite.
A booby trap?
Yes, that's it. A booby trap. You've been in this mission hospital for the last 6 days.
Oh. How bad am I?
You are a desperately injured man, Mr. Morton. But judging from what you've told us in your delirium, and what would be awaiting you outside, it doesn't matter very much, does it? Well, well, well. What a low-down trick. Making a booby of them with a trap set so high in the mountain. It's enough to make any self-respecting thug explode with anger. The creaking door.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
You
finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you escape.
Escape with us now to the barren wastes of northern Mexico and the story of a fortune in cash to be had for the asking. As Anthony Ellis tells it in his exciting story, This Side of Nowhere.
You want to know where you can pick up a quarter of $1 million? Well, I know a place. The money's in $100 bills. The last time I saw it, it was all in one place, and the people who had it were the friendliest people in the world. That is, if you don't mind their particular kind of friendship. There hadn't been much business in Missouri. Too much competition, and the yokels were spoiled taking rides in the new stuff flying around. My old Stenson didn't look like much, and I couldn't risk doing tricks in her. With me, when the customer paid $3 for a ride, that's what he got. A ride. So there wasn't much business in Missouri. I've been luckier in Kansas, though. In a couple of towns where a plane is still a fancy contraption. As I headed west, I was a couple of bucks ahead. About 50 miles east of Wichita, I put down in a grass field outside Willing. And I figured a day or so here would get me enough to buy a new tire for the right wheel. Al, hello there. Is this your field?
Hey, that was pretty. Coming down out of the sky like that, I seen you from a long way.
You like planes, huh?
Sure.
Is this your field?
Yep. Down Spurs, Bogan Stream.
Well, look, I'd like to make a deal with you.
That so?
I'll be here for a couple of days. Let me keep the plane here, and I'll give you $5.
Five? Well...
And a free ride.
Mister, you got a deal. My name's Bill Maydew. Shake.
I put up my posters in town and waited, and by 6 o'clock that night, I made $36. It looked as if the town of Willing would keep me around for maybe 3 or 4 days. I put the Stenson to bed in Bill Maydew's barn and then started out to find a place for myself. The old man walked along with me. Say, have you got any suggestions where I can put up while I'm here?
See that flying red horse sign up there?
Yeah.
Well, right across the street is Maydew's Willing Hotel. Nice and quiet. $2 a night. Breakfast, 50 cents.
Oh, yours, huh?
Yeah, it ain't fancy, but it's restful. Got a city woman staying there, down from Kansas City.
No?
Taking a rest.
Oh, that sounds fine.
Hey, we're having steak for dinner. I'll get the wife to put on an extra one for you.
With the steak inside, I felt pretty good. And about an hour after dinner, I got a look at the hotel's other guest. She was tall, with a big city, dry, crisp figure, and special-looking, too. She didn't seem to notice me as she went over to the desk and started to write a letter. I got quiet, and along about 9 o'clock, I was ready to hit the hay.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
You're the man with the plane, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. Name's Gannett.
Mr. Maydew told me about you.
Oh?
I'm Phyllis Naylor.
Well, it's nice to meet you.
I wonder if you'd do me a favor.
Why, sure.
I wanted to go to Wichita tomorrow, but the bus service is so bad I'd have to wait until afternoon.
Oh, you want me to fly you?
Yes.
Well, that's about 50 miles. I'd lose business here.
I'll pay you $50.
$50? Well, I wouldn't lose that much. Let's make it 25.
If that's what you want. Can we leave early?
Anytime. 7, okay?
I'll meet you down here at 7.
All right. So long.
You all set, Miss Naylor? Shall I put your suitcase on the plane?
Oh, no thanks, Mr. Maydew. I can manage.
We'll miss you. Come visit us again sometime.
Yes, I will.
Well, let's go.
I can come along and keep you company, Mr. Gannett.
Okay, it's all right with me.
No, I'd rather he didn't.
Well, it's your ticket. Anything you say. I'll take you up when I come back, Bill. A couple of hours, huh?
I'll wait for you.
Hustle me up some business, huh? So long. You done much flying?
Quite a bit.
Oh? Do any yourself?
Yes.
Oh, swell, swell. Would you like to move up here beside me and take over?
Oh, no thanks.
How?
Mr. Gannett.
Yeah?
How much would you want to fly me to Mexico?
Are you kidding?
No. Don't you think it might be nice?
Oh, sure, but not in this crate. Short hops for me. Try the airline in Wichita.
I can pay.
I'll bet you can, but not me. The old windmill wouldn't take it.
$5,000?
Five?
I could buy a ticket, but I prefer you to take me.
Oh? Why?
Maybe because I like you.
I'm glad. Look, are you in trouble?
Of course not.
Well, then why don't you use a scheduled line?
That's not your business. I've got the cash. Will you do it?
No, you better try somebody else.
We're not going to land, Wichita.
Now, that's what you think.
I've got a gun, Mr. Gannett. Don't turn around. Here.
Hey, look, now be a good girl, will you? We've only got enough gas to get to Wichita.
You're lying. The gauge says full.
Well, it's broken.
I'll take a chance.
We can't make it in one hop. I'll have to come down sometime.
That's all right.
You don't want to get me in trouble, do you?
No. I told you I like you. Just as long as you take me where I want to go. Head south. Go on.
Okay. Where do you want to go?
Torreon.
Well, that's over 1,000 miles. We'll never make that.
I think we can. Where do you think you'll have to stop to refuel?
I guess we can make Dallas if we don't blow up.
All right. Please remember, Mr. Gannett, I'm quite serious. I can easily shoot you and fly myself. I'd rather not.
Yeah. I'll remember. An hour later, we were flying over Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I turned around just once to look at her. She hadn't been bluffing. The gun lay in her hand, steady and pointed at me. I began to think about Dallas. We'd have to come down there. It wouldn't be hard to get the gun away from her then, but there was something else. $5,000. I thought of what I could do with it, and the more I thought, the more I wondered if I was a sucker. Why fly with a gun in your back when you can make a deal just for the asking? If she was in trouble, that was her business. I didn't know anything about it, and I didn't want to. I reached for the map.
What are you doing?
Don't get nervous, honey. I just want to take a look at the map.
Oh.
Torreon, huh? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'd say that's about 300 miles below the border, southwest.
I know.
That's bad country in between if we had to come down.
I know that, too.
Were you kidding about that $5,000?
No.
All right. Put away your gun.
What happens when we land at Dallas?
Gas up, check the motor, and go on.
If you try any tricks,
why should I? Good looker like you, $5,000.
Can I sit next to you?
Yeah, sure, come on. There we go.
Your first name's Deke, isn't it?
You've been reading hotel registers.
Yes. You won't be sorry about this.
I'll bet I won't. I was proud of the old windmill. I never thought she could make it, but by 5 o'clock that afternoon, we landed at a town a little north of Laredo. We talked about how we were going to get across the border. She still hadn't told me anything, but I knew that she wanted to get into Mexico with no questions asked. So we decided to steer clear of Laredo and border guards and hang around until it got dark and then take a chance. Took some extra gas aboard and went over the motor. Then there was nothing to do but wait for the night. We went to a cafe to eat.
Ooh, it's hot.
That's the American idea of Mexican food. Unless it burns your tongue off, it's not the real thing.
You done much night flying?
Oh, plenty. Used to be with a commercial outfit.
No.
They fired me for fighting with a passenger. That was before the war. Flew B-24s out of England, then came back. Now I'm too old for jets and too independent for commercial jobs, so I'm just a sky bum. What's so funny?
Oh, you. You sound so tough. I wonder.
What?
About you. I think you'd make love like a high school boy.
You want to find out?
No. How soon do you think we can take off for Torreon?
Oh, about an hour or so.
What about our lights when we cross the border?
We won't have any.
Good.
Anyone ever tell you that you're good to look at?
Yes, but you can tell me again.
I like your eyes. They're soft sometimes.
Hi, Mac. Hi.
Sometimes mean.
Going to the party?
It's exciting, though.
No. Got patrol.
Hey, you're not listening to me. That's the first time I've seen that.
What?
You looked scared when the cop came in.
Come on, it's time to go.
We took off soon after dark. I took her up to about 8,000 feet and we crossed the border. Next stop, Torreon. Laredo was nearly 200 miles behind us when the Stenson guy just quit cold. We went down nice and easy. I couldn't see anything below. All I knew was that we weren't going to make Torreon. Phyllis didn't scream. She just watched me. Then before we hit, grabbed a suitcase up and held it in her lap. I remember thinking then it was a funny thing to do. And that was all for a while.
Escape, under the direction of Norman McDonald, returns in just a moment.
Now Hank's OTR app is available free from the Google Play Store. Just install the app on your phone and listen to your favorite old-time radio shows on your car stereo or headset. Make those long commutes, trips, gym sessions, and so on much more enjoyable. Again, that is Hank's OTR free from the Google Play Store.
And now, back to Escape.
I woke up. For a moment, everything was a surprise. I was alive. It was getting light. A lock of the girl's hair was falling over her eye. I reached out for it, felt it. Was wet. Bloody. She was alive, but I couldn't tell how much. I looked at my watch. It was 4:30. As the gray light came through the broken window, I saw something else. A suitcase. It had broken open and spilled out 4 or 5 neat green packages. The thing was full. Packages of new $100 bills. Must have been $250,000. Phyllis? Phyllis? Phyllis, you okay? Come on. Come on. Come on, now, can you sit up?
Oh.
You all right?
Oh, my head hurts.
Now, take it easy for a while. Here, now, give me your gun.
No.
Come on, come on. I want to have a look outside.
All right.
I'll be right back. So we'd come down in a kind of basin, and all around were ridges and low peaks. It was rough country, all right. From what I could see, mean. I had an idea water was going to be a problem. far as you could see, there was nothing but cactus and yucca trees. I started back for the plane, and that's when I saw him, sitting under a bush, his hat on his knees.
Good morning, senor.
He was round, and his face was the color of sand. And his smile were lots of flashing white and gold teeth. I guess he was mostly Indian. He had the happiest voice I'd ever heard.
You've had a terrible accident, senor. I'm so glad you're alive.
How long have you been here?
Since earlier.
How much earlier?
Oh, much earlier, senor.
Well, why didn't you try and get us out?
If you were dead, one must wait a reasonable time to allow the spirit to depart.
Oh. Well, I'm glad to see you. My name's Gannett.
Gannett?
Mm-hmm.
You're American?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I love the Americans. They're so rich. I am Esteban. I will help you. There is another in the machine with you?
Yeah, a girl. She's hurt.
We take her to my village. There she will be taken care of. I'm so happy that you are alive, senor.
Where are we?
A little from my village.
No, I mean how far from Torreon?
Torreon? It is many days from here.
Ah. What's the name of your village?
El Cielo. It means heaven, senor. You will like it. My people will be so happy to see you. Come, we must help your friend.
When we got back to the plane, Phyllis was on her feet, and I noticed that the suitcase was closed again. She had a cut on her head, but otherwise she was okay. She let me carry the case, and we followed Esteban for about a mile to a little canyon. And there we saw El Cielo. A dozen adobe huts sprawled over the canyon floor.
Let me take your suitcase, senor. I will put it where it will be safe.
No, thanks. I'll take care of it.
As you wish. Won't you step in here? I'll bring you food and water.
Thank you.
Oh, it is a pleasure. I love Americans. You are our guest. We are happy to see you.
How do you feel?
Oh, much better, thank you.
I'm not so sure about that guy. I've heard about these Indians. They're not usually very fond of Americans, or any strangers for that matter.
Do you think he'll help us get to Torreon?
I don't know. And the way he talks, it must be about 100 miles from here.
Oh.
Listen, honey, it's none of my business, but that suitcase of yours.
What about it?
Now, there's no sense kidding. I know what's in it.
Oh.
It's a good idea not to let these people know they steal, not the way we do, but because they feel it's right. Americans are rich, and anything they've got must be valuable. They see nothing wrong in it.
We've got a gun.
They'll soon not have to use it. You want to tell me about the suitcase?
No.
Okay. We let it go at that. Esteban brought us food, and afterwards we met the rest of the village. They were very polite. Too polite. I couldn't figure it out. Maybe I don't trust people, but nobody can be that happy to see a stranger. Now they gave us a hut for the night, and after the dogs had quieted down, it got very quiet. You asleep?
No.
How's the head?
Fine, thanks.
I'm sorry about this.
It's all right.
We're going to have to get out as soon as we can. These people are...
You think they'll make trouble?
I don't know. They're just too happy. There's something wrong the way our fat friend looks at you.
Maybe he thinks I'm pretty.
Yeah, maybe.
What are you going to do about it?
But look, in the morning, we're going back to the plane. There's a chance I can do something to fix it up. Just a chance.
Oh?
Yeah. Well?
You were telling me something back at the cafe in Laredo. About me?
Yeah, I was, wasn't I? I guess you're not very scared about all this, are you?
I don't want to think about it.
You ought to be thinking about it.
Deke.
Look, we're in a tight spot.
I don't care.
But I do. Maybe if we ever got out of here.
All right, high school boy. Good night.
The next morning, Esteban went with me back to the plane. was still there. That is, most of it. Of course, they'd taken everything movable from inside, stripped the rubber tires off, stolen the prop. Now I know why I hadn't trusted them. What about it, Esteban?
It, senor?
Nice hospitality. I wanted to patch her up.
Senor, some dirty thieves must have come out of the night and done this
thing. Yeah, you will say that again.
Surely you would not suspect my people.
Oh, no, not your people.
I'm so happy then.
Well, we'll have to rent a couple of your mules. Maybe you'll guide us to a town that's got a bus or a railroad or something.
You have money to pay for these things?
Little, yeah.
We talk about it maybe tomorrow. Now we go back to the village.
We didn't talk about it tomorrow or the next day or the next. Esteban always made some excuse. We weren't prisoners, but wherever we went, there was always one of them watching. Just watching and smiling. But there was something about those smiles. It was on the fifth day that things really went wrong. The villagers had left our hut alone, and I guess we got a little careless about the suitcase. Phyllis and I had been up to a ridge 4 miles away to take a look at the country and our chances for hiking out. When we got back, it was almost dark.
The suitcase!
What?
It's gone.
Well, I'll be...
They've stolen it. You think it's funny? Stop it! Stop it!
I'm sorry, but... What's that for? Don't you see how funny it is? $250,000 stolen by Indians? Where are they going to spend it? On what?
Got to get it back. You help me. I'll share it with you.
You will?
Yes. Listen, you might as well know. Remember the bank holdup in Chicago last year?
Yeah. $1,000,000 and securities.
That suitcase is part of it. A friend of mine left it with me. He got out of the country.
Now he's in Torreon?
Yes. I was to hang around in small towns until things got quieter. When you came along, it gave me a chance. I was to meet him in Torreon. I don't care about him now. It's you and me.
Oh.
We've got to get away from here. We can go to Mexico City, anywhere.
How far do you think we'd get in this country?
We'll take their mules.
We can try. Esteban's the boy to find. You and me?
Yes, don't you know that by now?
Okay.
Senor, what can I say? No one has been in your house. It is unthinkable.
Look, you know what this is?
It is a gun, senor.
Yeah.
Only the rich can afford such things.
I'm telling you to round up that suitcase or else. Now tell your friends. I mean it. Now go ahead.
El americano dice que tenemos que devolver la maleta. Si no, se va a enojar mucho y nos fusilará a todos, incluyendo a los niños.
¡Tenemos muchas!
Well?
They say they are very much afraid.
Get me the suitcase.
We brought you here when you might have died in the desert. Surely you would not harm us.
That's a lot of double talk. You brought us here to steal us blind.
Senor, you have made a terrible accusation. We're very unhappy. Perhaps you would care to search the village.
You get that soup. what's the use? And there wasn't any use. I couldn't shoot them down in cold blood. I knew I'd never find the suitcase. I also knew that we had to get out of there. We'd lost the money, but at least for the moment, we still had our lives. I asked Esteban for mules.
Senor, a terrible thing has happened. Last night, the mules strayed away. We have none left. It is a great loss.
So I could call him a liar. He was, too, but I couldn't find the mules. That decided it.
I'm afraid of them.
Yeah, I don't like the way Esteban's been looking at that ring of yours. We're going to have to make it out on foot.
Well, anything's better than staying here.
If I only had that map. Oh, well, I don't think they'll try to stop us. We'll start tonight when it gets cool. You better get some sleep. The That evening, I heard the villagers moving around outside the hut. I kept our gun ready, but nothing happened. And then, about midnight, we took a couple of skins of water, some tortillas, and walked out of El Cielo. Nobody said goodbye. Nobody tried to stop us. But as I looked back, I saw in the moonlight a group of people huddled together, watching us. We walked for 3 days. Desert. Heat. Night. Cold. Then the water was gone. How you doing?
Oh, all right. I'm thirsty.
Try not to think about it.
Can we rest a minute?
You better not. Not yet. Try to get to the hills. It's only a few miles. It'll be hotter. Now, save your breath.
Dave!
What?
Dave!
Don't move. Don't move. It's a Gila monster. All right now, fellas. Don't move. Just don't move, and I'll blow his head off. Now, keep still. That's it. Keep
still.
Lived on for about 2 hours, then died raving, cursing me, the money, and herself. A week later, I was picked up. That was 6 months ago. The Mexican police tried to find my plane, but I couldn't tell them where it was. They'd never even heard of El Cielo. So, somewhere in Coahuila, Mexico, there's a village. Maybe if you go down there, you'll find a suitcase with $250,000. Or maybe you'll just find kids cutting paper dolls out of $100 bills. Just crash your plane this side of Torreon, and then look for a round, smiling Indian and his happy friends.
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you This Side of Nowhere by Anthony Ellis. William Conrad was starred as Deke and Virginia Gregg as Phyllis, with Don Diamond as Esteban. In the supporting cast were Lou Krugman and Ralph Moody. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Ivan Dittmar.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Back in the early days of Suspense, more than a decade ago, we would not have dared present the story you were about to hear. You would have said it was implausible, too far-fetched. But a lot of things that we thought never could happen are commonplace in this age of flying saucers and satellites. The fantasies of yesterday's science fiction writers are today's humdrum household realities. It's a long way from the family doctor's sugar-coated pill to the psychiatrist's Rauwolfia capsule. And tomorrow's pharmacology holds for us miracles yet undreamt of. Our story concerns one of these wonder drugs, which, who knows, may even now be in the experimental laboratory stage. Listen, listen then as Barry Kroger stars in It's All in Your Mind.
For some time, I'd had the feeling that our three lives, the Laramies and mine, we're on a collision course. If we went on this way, one of us was sure to get hurt. Perhaps all of us. But I couldn't stop. This evening, as I arrived at their house, I felt a strange reluctance to go in, an ominous certainty that the crash was close.
Jack, darling.
Hello, Anne. Guess I'm a bit late.
Oh, it's all right. Howard was late getting home, too. He's upstairs changing.
Oh?
How about mixing us a drink?
Sure. How is Howard?
How is he ever?
Mm-hmm. New dress?
Mm-hmm. You like?
It's exciting. You're exciting, Mrs. Laramie. Anne, darling.
Oh, there you are, Jack. I thought I heard the bell.
Hi, Howard. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, I was late myself. Jack, tonight I have something really big to celebrate.
What happened? The company made you a vice president?
Oh, better than that. Remember the experiment I told you about last month?
Which one? You keep so many going at once.
The mental telepathy drug. Here they are.
You mean you've really done it?
Mm-hmm.
Those are your do-it-yourself telepathy pills?
You might put it that way. When absorbed into the bloodstream and carried to the brain, the chemical in these capsules sensitizes the brain to the thought waves of others, just as the flick of a switch tunes a radio set to a broadcast.
Have you tested these pills, Howard?
Well, no, not completely. That's why I brought these first two home. I'm going to take one, and the other is for you.
For me? Why me?
Howard, this could be dangerous.
Oh, nonsense, Anne. It's perfectly safe. I've tested the pills on animals. They're absolutely harmless. Of course, a monkey can't tell me whether it's reading my mind. For that, I need a human being.
Well, it sounds pretty risky, tinkering with the brain.
Why? I dare say you've often tinkered with yours.
Oh, not me. I stay away from black magic.
Ever take a sleeping pill?
Oh, yes, but...
Tranquilizer?
Oh, couple of times.
Well, you see.
but, Howard, reading people's minds...
Well, why not, Jack? Duke University's experiments have established telepathy as a fact. Some people can read the minds of others.
I guess so. I don't see how.
Take this capsule and you will.
You're sure it'll be all right?
Jack, would I subject my best friend to a test if I thought it was dangerous? Anyway, I have an antidote prepared, just in case.
Jack, please don't.
Besides, I'm taking one myself.
Well,
Jack.
Might as well give it a try.
That's the spirit. All right. Bottoms up.
Oh, Howard, this is insane. No telling what it might do to Jack.
Well, how about me? I've taken one.
Oh, I didn't mean
Jack,
that.
Jack, how do you feel? You notice anything?
No. What should I notice?
Well, if the capsules do what I think they will, you'll be aware of our thoughts.
I'm sorry, Howard. I don't get anything like that.
Of course, I'm forgetting. It'll take some time for the chemical to reach the brain. Look, why don't you two go ahead and have dinner, and I'll go back to the lab and prepare equipment for the tests. And you needn't come down for an hour or so.
You mean I've got to take some tests?
Well, naturally. Just a few controlled experiments. It won't take long.
Howard, dinner's almost ready.
Science is more important than dinner, my dear. An hour, all right, Jack?
Well, okay.
Too bad playing with pills isn't grounds for divorce. Darling, are you sure you're all right?
All right. I feel wonderful. We have got a whole hour alone together. Music. Let there be music. Will you dance, madame?
I'd rather kiss. Oh, Jack, I never knew what a kiss was before you.
Darling.
I'm in your arms. It makes me remember I'm a woman.
Mm.
I come alive. All over.
I know.
Darling, kiss me again.
We'll return to our musical cocktail in a moment. But now, here is the latest news.
Oh, darling, I can't go on like this. It's unbearable.
Have you asked him for a divorce?
No.
Why not? You promised.
Oh, it's no use, Jack. I know he'd never agree to it. Too stuffy. Besides, it'd be bad for his career.
This is insane. Three adult people should be able to work this out logically. Reduced to its simplest equation, three people are one too many. One must go.
One must go.
Yes. One must go. But how?
Meanwhile, here at home, the latest of a series of dope tests.
And listen.
Was robbed early this morning of nearly $50,000 worth of narcotics. Police Chief Hayes assigned 10 extra officers.
That's it.
What do you mean? That's what?
Howard is working tonight alone. What if something happened to him and it looked like another dope robbery?
What if something...
If he got in the way of the burglars, they'd have to kill him, wouldn't they?
Why, yes. Of course they would. They'd have to kill him.
It was after 11 when I got to the Murdoch Laboratories, down by the waterfront, where the damp air smells of salt and sewage and dead fish. Looking up through the fog, I saw a light on the third floor, the window of the lab. For a moment, I thought I would be sick, but it passed, and I clutched at the gun in my pocket. I climbed quietly up the stairs and entered the lab.
Is that you, Jack?
Yeah. Ready for the tests?
No, not quite. You sit right there. I'll be with you in a moment.
As Howard puttered, I casually questioned him and learned that the lab's supply of narcotics was kept in a locked cabinet in the next room. The setup was perfect. The police would find the dope missing and Howard dead. The gun felt cold as my fingers closed on the butt. I would have sworn...
Howard, for a moment I could have sworn I heard you whispering, but I was watching your lips and they didn't move.
What? Well, it's beginning to work, then.
Success. Real success at last. A milestone in sight.
Can you get my thoughts, Jack?
Must concentrate. Make it easier for him. Do you read me, Jack?
Yes. Yes, I do. I can read your mind.
Oh, the capsule works. You're telepathic.
It was mad. Insane. I could read his mind. I stared at Howard as he bent over his notes. And then it came to me. If I could read his mind, he could read mine.
Jack, I got it. I got that. You're thinking I can read your thoughts. I can.
My God, he's doing it.
I am.
He knows I'm going to kill him.
Kill? Kill? Well, what are you thinking, Jack?
What's the matter? Has something gone wrong with the drug?
Why do you want to kill me, Jack?
I've got to hurry. Don't give him a chance.
He's mad. He's going to kill me. But he's my best friend. I've got to get out of here.
Howard, stop!
Got to get away. He's going to kill me. He's going to...
In the lab next door, I broke open the cabinet and cleaned it out, emptied everything into Howard's briefcase, and quietly left the building. Along the wharf outside, I slipped the case and the gun into the water. The tide was going out. In an hour, they would be lost forever. Then, I drove back to my apartment. Killing Howard had unnerved me, but the telepathy experience was worse. It shocked me again as I walked across the lobby. A flood of thoughts reached out for me, clamoring to be heard, tumbling over and over each other like ants in my mind.
When I've been so tired. Everything closes early. She's nothing but a pig. Why don't all these people...
The barrage confused me. It was difficult to think. I hurried to my room. It's eerie, knowing all those people's thoughts. Call Anne in the morning. Probably not safe now. Now I'll know all her thoughts. All of anybody's thoughts. Can do anything. Get anything.
Better try to get some sleep. I'm tired. So tired.
Huh? What's that?
I can't move. Can't get away.
What's going on? Oh. Who could that be? Oh, the guy next door. A nervous little fellow.
Oh, no. Must I dream other people's nightmares, too?
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio.
When the alarm went off at 7, I was still tired. The nightmares of the guy next door had kept us both awake half the night. I realized that I couldn't take much more of other people's thoughts. I needed the antidote. Anne would know where Howard kept it. Wonderful thing, telepathy, Howard had said. Too bad he didn't live long enough. He'd have learned it's like living in a madhouse.
Hello?
Anne?
Jack, darling.
Everything all right?
Of course, yes. The police were here.
They've gone?
Yes. They're convinced it was the dope gang.
Good. I'm coming over.
Well, isn't that dangerous?
I'll decide that.
Jack, you've never used that tone before.
I've never felt like this before.
What's wrong?
I'll tell you when I get there. She wondered what was wrong. Let her live other people's nightmares, and she'd find out soon enough. Suddenly I realized that Anne's thoughts hadn't come to me over the phone. And I remembered Howard saying something about the effect diminishing with distance, that I'd have to be near people to pick up their thoughts. But I kept hoping that the drug had worn off during the night. The instant I stepped into the apartment lobby, I found out.
Good morning, Mr. Benton.
Hi, Joe. Got a morning paper left?
Yeah, sure, Mr. Benton. Read all about the big dope murder.
What did you say?
You're looking great today, Mr. Benton. You got a big deal on?
Was I talking out loud?
Why, you...
What's the matter, Mr. Benton?
Forget it. I'm in a hurry.
Funny. He acts like he knew what I was thinking. Boy, it's a good thing he doesn't.
On the street, I stopped, looked back at Joe. He was still staring after me. Got to watch it. Almost gave myself away. Used to wish I knew what people were thinking. What an advantage I'd have.
Ham and eggs. You'd think that woman after 25 years has learned to cook ham and eggs. She's good for nothing.
Can't
else.
Keep this up. I need the antidote.
A quarter of eight, I get hurry. Oh, the woman would be
I couldn't stand it, listening to other people's troubles, their gripes, complaints, psychotic hates, the evil and filth that spawn in the minds of men. It was almost like a punishment, like retribution. I couldn't shut out the thoughts. They were all around me. By the time I slammed the door at Anne's, I knew I couldn't face them again. Anne, help me.
Jack, you shouldn't have come here now. The police
You've got to help me, Anne.
Help you? What's wrong? Does anyone know?
No, it's the pill. It worked.
The pill. The telepathy drug. Could it have worked? Is he sick?
Sit down, darling.
I don't want to sit down. Just help me get rid of these thoughts, these voices.
He doesn't know what he's saying. He's losing his mind.
I'm not losing my mind. You see, I know what you're thinking. It's real. We laughed about it. But, Anne, the antidote. Where did Howard keep the antidote?
Why, he kept that sort of thing with the narcotics for safety. Didn't you see it?
With the narcotics? I didn't look at labels. I just grabbed everything in the cabinet, threw it into the harbor. It's washed out to sea by now. And we've got to get away.
Oh, Jack, we can't. The police would be suspicious.
Oh, let them be. I don't care so long as I get away from people. Look, we'll get married right away and get out of here.
Oh, no. I don't want to go away. I don't want to get married. I don't need Jack anymore. I could do better. Could tell the police. I didn't kill Howard. They can't arrest me.
Anne, you wouldn't tell. You said you loved me. Anne, you've got to help me.
I'll help you, darling.
In a pig's eye. I'm free. Want to stay that way. Must call police. Tell them he did it. Get rid of him.
You do mean it. Anne, stay away from that phone.
Jack. No, Jack, no. Help. Don't touch me.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, Jack. You're joking me.
Yes, my darling. Oh. You won't talk to anyone ever again.
Please, Jack, don't.
Can't breathe. Ethel,
I'm dying and I can't do anything about it.
Stop, Jack! Jack, I won't tell!
So black. So dark.
There's somebody at the door. I've got to get out of here. Out the back way. I've got to get away.
So many people, I can't stand it. I can't think. Get out of my way! Leave me alone! Stop thinking! Stop thinking, all of you! Stop thinking! I can't stand it! Leave me alone! Stop it! Stop it!
Jumped off an honest officer. He ran right out in front of me. Well, how could I know he was gonna? You expect me to read his mind?
Suspense. In which Barry Kroger starred in William N. Robeson's production of It's All in Your Mind. Written by Morris Lee Green and William Walker. Supporting Barry Kroger and It's All in Your Mind were Shirley Mitchell, Mary Ellis Rivard, Lou Krugman, Lawrence Dobkin, and Sam Pierce. Suspense.
You have been listening to Hank's Old Time Radio, the 24/7 internet radio station featuring the best in classic OTR shows.
In the year 1864, in the December of that year, to be more exact,